Polar water from Ian?
I do not.
Thanks, Ian.
You have a whole fridge full of seltzers.
But not the special flavors. Welcome to the Completely Unnecessary Podcast for Tuesday, September 28th, 2021, alongside Ian Ferguson.
Kind of tastes like Fruit Loops.
I'm Pat Contry. Don't rub it in, Ian. On the show today, we'll be talking about the Nintendo Direct, directly Nintendo to you. Ian has passed on from his game store life. Are your old games worth anything? Also, maybe an ethical dilemma for the Patreon poll topic as well. And other fun stuff. Ian, how was your weekend?
It was good.
My buddy.
My pal. I grilled two kinds of hot dogs this weekend. It's very nice. I grilled both from Iowa Farms, my favorite butcher shop in San Diego.
Okay.
One was the carne asada hot dog. They're spicy. They're delicious. They're wonderful. All beef hot dogs, mixed with delicious, wonderful carne asada spices. But the other hot dogs I got were the, skin on Franks. I haven't had a skin on hot dog in ages, or a natural casing hot dog.
It's like more like a sausage.
No, it's like, you know, the hot dog
twisty thing.
You know, the hot dogs, like you grill them and they get all charry and delicious.
Yeah.
And they crackle a little bit. Yeah. That's a natural casing hot dog. They're delicious.
I thought that's most of the hot dogs will go on the grill.
No, well, I mean, it's most of the hot dogs that you should be grilling.
I mean, I see. Because a lot of them are pre-cooked already, so you can just...
Like Oscar Mayer and Ballpark and Cons and Bar S and other bullshit like that.
Frank just goes for the Hebrew Nationals. The kosher dogs are great.
Those are good.
Those are great.
Those are good.
Those are solid. That'll make me sick. Like the overly processed ones, shit ones make me sick.
No.
Are used to.
No, the butcher shop ones are definitely going to be a higher grade of...
Weren't you supposed to make me something with the Hatch chilies by now?
Yeah, I'm gonna. I just haven't yet.
Okay.
I've been...
All right, no rush.
Slow.
Intermittent fasting, that's fine. That sounds like a good weekend, though.
Yeah, hot dogs. And I worked my last Luna shift, but we'll get into that.
That'll
later.
Be a full topic. That'll be a not-so-common podcast-style segment.
Good. What did you do this weekend?
I edited a Flea Market Madness. Volume 41 is out right now.
Oh, 41. That's a lot.
I've done five this year. Wow. I was only doing like one or two years since I moved to Castle Country. And now it's like, if I do five a year, they're going to be done in 2 years. 2023, a 50th anniversary of my YouTube channel. That's going to be it for Flea Market Madness. That's it. That's how they're basically being done. It looks like. So like five or six next year, then five or six the year after that.
Keeps you putting out that content.
Well, yeah, because the NES Punk stuff fell off, obviously, for lots of reasons. I'm still going to do one or two this year. I did two last year. I did three the year before. That could have been the end. That Christmas episode of 2019, that was almost like prophetic in terms of for the world change, but also...
Was that the last one I was in? Was that the one where you had me record something at Luna?
I don't think you recorded for that one. Did you?
For the Christmas one?
For 2 years ago, 2019?
I don't know. That's why I'm asking you.
It was Days Before Christmas, the PAL exclusive Super Nintendo game.
Oh, no, I don't think I
did. Literally edited that 2 hours before my flight. It was done. And it rendered without a hitch. I went to see my parents in Pennsylvania and my sister. Something told me to just go see him, because obviously if I didn't, I wouldn't have seen him for like a year and a half.
Right.
So it was super weird. Remember, I was like, oh, yeah, well, I went. December 23rd. And it surprised my mom. She was crying. Probably because she didn't want to see me. No, I'm kidding. Why are you here?
We don't want to see you. Doing nice. Quiet.
We want to be
Christmas.
Quiet. But it was, yeah, that could have been the last NES Punk episode, though. Like, the way I ended it, it could have been.
Mm.
I know you didn't see it.
No, that one I didn't.
It was one of my better episodes. My writing's gotten stronger the past ones. Less silliness, less extraneous things, you know? Nothing will beat Frank, though, for berating me with a megaphone. Mm. 100-degree heat.
Well, no, that was very good.
That was very good. Thanks. Thanks, Ian, for admitting that. Not that I did well. Ian won't say that, but like it was good. Like I was involved with it, but I didn't do it.
You've done wonderfully.
Thanks, Dad. Thanks, Dad. Thanks, Dad. Hold back those compliments until I'm in therapy. Yeah, that's what I did. Disney, speaking of creativity, Disney is suing both Stan Lee and the Steve Ditko estates over Marvel IP stuff since they are trying to terminate the copyrights and have them revert back to the creators in 2023. I don't know much about this copyright rule. I know in general it's around like 70 years, and it changes based upon when they change the laws. There's like a graph in terms of like when the copyrights run out depending upon when they were created. They vary widely. Like in the 1800s, it was like only 20 years. Well, no one lived that long back then anyway.
No.
But then it like got wider and wider.
By 20, you had a few grandchildren.
But by 20, yeah, you're a great grandpappy when you're 38 and you're a couple of years left to go. Yeah, you had to get those kids in quick to sustain the human race back then. But Hollywood Reporter reported that Marvel has filed 5 lawsuits against the families of Ditko, Gene Colan, not as familiar with him, and Stan Lee, claiming that the superheroes they created are ineligible for copyright termination as they were created as works for hire on a contractual basis. In the admittedly unlikely event the outfit loses, then ownership of every big name that the aforementioned trio originated would be out of Marvel's hands, effectively blowing a hole in the MCU and losing both Kevin production house, and costing Disney billions upon billions of dollars. Okay, so Ditko is a co-creator of Spider-Man. I mean, he did the fucking design. He doesn't get enough credit. He also created a Doctor Strange, other stuff. Obviously, Stan Lee was involved in creating Spider-Man and a bunch of other 60s heroes. Not as familiar with Gene Colan. So, Siegel and Schuster, who created Superman back in, 38? Jesus Christ, that long ago? They tried to sue DC to get the rights back to their states, and they lost that. They lost that battle. I don't know if this is going to be different. I think this is just a payout. Just pay them out. Pay the families out. Just give them a fucking payout. That's all. But if this happens, that means you can't have Marvel Spider-Man comics or toys, or it won't be in the movies. It would be the rights of the estate to license them out to whoever the hell they wanted to. They'd be totally independent properties, which you can't imagine that happening, but it's not out of their own possibility.
Yeah.
That would be insane. DC be like, hey, we want to license Spider-Man to hang out with the Teen Titans, and they could do it. Like, it would be a possibility. Or there'd be like just an independent, random ass, wacky Spider-Man show that isn't associated with Marvel as we know it. Like, that could happen. Weird. People were like, saying, oh, they're asking for too much money. It's like, well, give the family something.
The fucking families of the creators.
Come on.
Give them something. And the fucking corporate worship that I've seen weird. The past couple days is just absolutely gross.
Give them something.
So many people so concerned about, I want product.
Yeah.
You have fucking decades of it. Eat shit. I have no patience for people like
60 this. Years of Spider-Man content, and every you have I think that Amazing Spider-Man is up to like 800 issue or so. Like, it's you don't want to get a blowback.
I don't care. Obviously
it's weird though, because we're actually attacking the corporation, but it's whiny fans, fanboys that are going to be the ones that are they're siding with them to get their product. You're right. It's a really weird situation.
It's very, very strange to see people do that. I understand. Like,
we all like Spider-Man.
In all seriousness. Yes, I understand. People don't want these characters to go away. People like the MCU. They like the Marvel Universe.
They wouldn't go away, though.
Right.
They wouldn't go away.
They wouldn't.
They just have to be licensed out.
Right.
I mean, if I own...
But that's what drives me nuts, is that no matter what happens, this character is not going to go away, but these people can't handle the thought of being inconvenienced without their content for fucking a few years.
You think the family of Stan Lee and Ditko don't want to make money off Spider-Man movies? Or
it's not like they're going to take Spider-Man and throw him in a safe and you're never going to see Spider-Man again.
They're not doing this not to make money off it. Well, unless you're an insane person. Yeah, I own the most popular, one of the most popular comic book characters on the planet, and he's one of the top three usually, along with like Superman and Batman. I'm gonna put him in a trunk somewhere and not use him. Like, no, that's insane. But yeah, they'd have the right to do that, potentially. We'll see what happens. I think it's interesting, that's all. God, imagine what once the copyrights start running out for video game characters, oh man, talk about fanboyism.
Mm-hmm.
That's gonna be something.
Yeah,
you know, I don't know how you're gonna take it as a Sonic fanboy, Ian, when Sega might lose the copyright to that eventually when you're 75 years
old. As a Sonic fan, I'm pretty used to bullshit.
You're used to bullshit?
I'm used to bullshit, so I'm not really super concerned.
Speaking of bullshit, Ian.
Yeah.
You see these Pokemon Oreos? I've been hearing about this past week or two.
Yeah.
You're the Pokemon man on the street, so you know about this stuff more than me.
I just think they're cute. I just think they're swell. I just think they're neat. The Pokemon Oreos. Nabisco made Pokemon Oreos with different Pokemon branded into the one side of the chocolate cookie. And apparently some are harder to find than others. And people are trying to sell like the Mew Oreos.
Are they really?
Let me look that up on for eBay. More money.
Means they'd have to take it out as a loose cookie.
Like, yes.
$100 or best offer. But you know how many? They're so rare that this is just the insane people that have taken them out. There's 7,000 of them on eBay.
They're not that rare. And that's the thing. A cookie company is not going to create a mold to make three fucking cookies.
Or like 100, yes.
Right. And then just sneak them into rare random packages.
It's a chase cake. There you are. Chase cookie. You got to find it.
I mean, okay. There have been like contests and stuff like that. But no.
One's being bid on for $3.25, but it's for charity. One is bid on $20. Like for $20, can't you just buy like 10 of these packs of cookies? Like, what's a pack of little Oreos? Like $2 for like a little single pack, like a dollar? What's a single pack called? 50
think,
cents?
I don't know. Not 50 cents. Man, it's not 1987.
Well, a box of Oreos costs $4. So like a single pack of
those are usually like $1.25.
Wow, they gouge you on those single packs.
They absolutely do.
Wow, I didn't know that, Ian.
I love Oreos. I refuse to buy them.
I like Hydrox. I'm Hydrox.
I refuse to buy Oreos.
Why do you refuse to buy them?
Because I fucking like them too much.
You'll eat a whole fucking sleeve?
I will eat the whole box. I will
do they have sleeves of those? They're not sleeves.
No, it's a tray.
It's just a tray.
I'll eat the whole fucking thing.
Is it just the sugary? Is it the cream?
I don't know. It's just, it's a per. No, I think it's more the chocolate cookie that I really like. Oh god, the Oreos are so good.
Dip, or do you untwist and lick? What's your technique? just shovel,
shovel is my technique by the Oreos. And it's no, but it's true. There are lots of things that I love, and I buy and I enjoy, and people know about them. But I don't buy Oreos, and I don't talk about Oreos because I don't want people to buy me Oreos.
You to have the OG Hydrox and see if it's the same reaction. Because they were before Oreo Hydrox.
I've had Hydrox before, and I have not had them in a long time, but I remember thinking there was a difference and not particularly caring for them. I bet you if I went back to it now, maybe I'd think
differently. They don't sell them out here. That's
they don't?
I don't think they do. It's a Drake's thing. It's regional, because they made those in the East Coast.
Okay.
Then Oreo and Nabisco basically stole the idea, just like Hostess stole all the ideas from OG Drake's.
Okay. Last time I had them was, you know, maybe I thought they were close enough to Oreos.
They're close.
Here's
their
my
Oreos
thing.
Were cheaper, so we always got Hydrox instead of Oreo.
I think you're right. I think I remember them being
Hydrox
closer, because when it comes to like name brand and off brand things,
Leaf bought them. Ugh.
Nothing. There's such a big difference between Oreos and like store brand chocolate cream sandwich cookies. They don't even taste remotely the same.
Except for Hydrox.
Yes. And now I remember Hydrox being kind of in that.
Because it came out in 1908.
In that Oreo camp.
It came out in 1908. It came out, Sunshine Biscuits owned it until 96. Then Keebler bought them for 5 years. And then Kellogg. And then Leaf owns the brand now. What the fuck? Now it's just a brand name. So I guess if you find them now, maybe they won't taste the same. Maybe. Yeah, Oreo came out 4 years after Hydrox. So they're back in the teens, like fucking Titanic days. Was that 1912 about? Interesting. I want to see if there was a lawsuit back then between Oreo and Hydrox. The thing about Hydrox was it's so plain, the design. There was no marketing. Oreo is all the marketing in the name. Hydrox sounds like a fucking penicillin substitute. That's what I mean. What is Hydrox?
Hydrox doesn't sound. Yeah,
it doesn't. It's a cleaning solution. It does not sound like a cookie.
It absolutely sounds.
Hydrox
like,
is the worst name.
Absolutely sounds like a cleaning solution.
Now this is turning into a
cookie
Hydrox. In 1908, when the cookie was created, the creator sought a name that would convey purity and goodness. Oh my God! And derived their choice from the component elements that constitute the molecule of water. I did not know that. I should have. So it's hydrogen, oxygen. They are not pure.
No.
They're great.
They're delicious.
It's pure sugar goodness. Wow. On the cookie's 100th anniversary, Kellogg's resumed distribution of Hydrox under the Sunshine label, with the first batches shipped in late August 2008. Hydrox aficionados have bombarded Kellogg's with thousands of phone calls and an online petition asking that production resume. The recipe was slightly altered from the original, and trans fats were removed. Oh, yeah, I love those trans fats. The cookies were available nationally for a limited time. And then less than a year later, Kellogg's have removed Hydrox from their website. You motherfuckers. Carvel sold ice cream goods manufactured with Hydrox cookie crumbs until 2012. I did not know that. They're cookie crumbs with Hydrox. You got to stand up for your East Coast food chains. Why are you leaning in?
You want to know a fun fact? As much as I love Oreos, not a big fan of cookies and cream ice cream.
You moved back about 18 inches. That was very uncomfortable. I don't think you ever did that before.
That was,
you don't like cookies and cream? They used to be my favorite ice cream.
I like a cookies and cream milkshake, but so there's something about cookies and cream ice cream where it just makes me want either vanilla or the cookies.
It's a tease?
It's weird.
I'm weird. You're like, it's like a junkie?
You got issues.
I won't tease you at ultimatenintender.com.
All right.
There's no tease. You can order and get the enamel pins. You can get the RBI baseball stickers, the Ultimate Nintendo books, the Not For Resale Blu-rays. You can get all that. There's no tease. T-shirts. I'm not going to tease you.
Don't ruin it.
It was good enough.
It's good enough.
I'm going over the line. And then I'm going to be on Twitch on Wednesday. Twitch.tv/country code, doing 80s and 90s commercials. And then I'm on Cameo, cameo.com/patcountry. I will fulfill all your needs. Doesn't sound right, but mm-hmm. Yeah. And then I'll be at Too Many Games in a week and a half, October 8th to 10th in Oaks, PA. I'll be doing a panel there. I'm not sure I'll be doing the Play the Punk Challenge because of COVID stuff. You want people close to each other. But yeah, it'll be a fun time. It'll be a fun time. And then I'll be at Retropalooza 2 weeks after that in the Dallas-Fort Worth area.
Sweet.
Sweet like your seltzer lemon water?
Like my life.
Oh, that's a common flavor.
Yeah, it's very common flavor.
I thought it was one of those weird ones.
No.
That you only get like cranberry lime or something that I want.
Cranberry lime is a fairly common flavor, too.
They don't have it at Sprouts. They only have like three or four flavors at Sprouts in the
really?
Bottle. They don't have cans. Only the bottles.
Pink grapefruit, black cherry.
Yes.
Lime, lemon.
They don't have lime. They're lemon there. At Sprouts. They have the fucking coconut one, no. And they have the plain one, no. I don't want a plain one. Sorry, I don't want a plain one.
I love plain, but you know what my favorite polar seltzers, and I for a long time I was like, I don't think I'm gonna like this, but I do. The ginger.
Never had that.
The ginger mule. Yeah, it just tastes like unsweetened ginger ale. It's delicious.
Okay. Ex Billy Mitchell site debunks his scores. PerfectPacman.com, Mitchell's old domain name, Mitchell, is now being used to debunk the Pac-Man and Donkey Kong players' contentious records. This comes from Ari Notice at Kotaku. So if you go to that website, have you gone to the website? Have you checked it out?
No, I haven't.
You go to the website, the first thing you see is an article saying, or I guess a post, the first thing is from September 27th, the video game fraud of the century, .8. I guess it's a long line of like the history of Billy Mitchell, alleged misnomers, like the weird video game player of the century award that really wasn't an award that was given to him in you see that thing, you heard about that, that's on here. There's all these different articles here, so
yeah, like, no, I'm looking through it. This is a pretty well organized takedown.
So
of old Bill Mitchell,
the first, and so this happened on August 31st, under new management. Welcome to our new blog, perfectpacman.com. This blog will be dedicated to gaming related topics of interest to us. If you like what you see, just give us a whistle. Disclaimer, the new site administration has no affiliation with any liars and or cheaters and or narcissistic frauds who may have owned this web domain in the past, but we appreciate the free advertising, LOL. Wow, that's pretty funny. And there's other articles there as well, but it looks like there had been something. There was one post in July and nothing then before that until December. So yeah, they must have been defunct. Billy let it lapse, and now there you go. You can read all about alleged naughty things being done by the video game player of the century, which is just a funny thing to even say out loud, isn't it?
It is. I don't know. I guess pin the medal on your shirt and go off. People are obsessed with titles. Why are people so obsessed with titles?
That's all they have to hold on to.
It's
an ego thing, Ian.
So much of like what we've talked about lately, like, it's all ego. Boil down to titles and people wanting titles. Shit at WADA and in the game grading. People want titles. People want Tommy has to be a fucking CEO. This guy has to be the video game fucking player of the year. Why does everyone need a goddamn title?
Well, it's also all the awards that Tommy, you know, gets that he.
Oh yeah, counts. Sure, yes.
And half of those are connected to like organizations he started,
or they're Orange County specific to like the six square blocks downtown.
The local Riverside Musicians Game Composer Award.
If you're an athlete, you know the greatest motivator of all is the fear of letting your teammates down. After all, a team is only as good as its weakest link. So you owe it to those wearing the same jersey as you to be your best every time you step on the field. That's why there's no vape in team. When you vape, you can expose your lungs to toxic chemicals that can damage your lungs. If you're a step behind, the team's a step behind. Brought to you by The Real Cost and the FDA.
You want to talk about Nintendo Direct, Ian?
Yeah, I'd rather.
I like your mood today, Ian.
I'd rather talk about the Nintendo. I am so tired. It's real Insomniac hours up here again.
I miss Insomniac, Ian.
Huh?
I miss Insomniac, Ian.
Oh, yeah. Here he is.
Huh? What?
Here he is.
What?
Ivani caught me like falling asleep with my eyes open a couple times yesterday. She's like, hey, what? I'm like, whoa. She's
like, you do that?
She's like, your eyes were wide open. I'm like, I was gone. I was long gone.
But but that's not being an insomniac. That's just being.
No. I mean, because I didn't sleep the night before, I was really shitty yesterday.
Oh, it's like me after a marathon where I'm just like, I'm like falling asleep.
I couldn't sleep. Anyways, Nintendo Direct. Nintendo.
It's for breakfast now.
Direct.
It was on the 23rd. It was on a Thursday. The ladies.
We went back and forth too much trying to figure out.
It was Wednesday or Thursday?
It was Thursday. Yeah, this is in the intro because it's 5 days old. So it's close to spoilage in terms of stuff. So there was lots of things announced. Let's go through some of them, shall we?
Yeah, there's a nice GameSpot. I love these articles that do my work for me. And just like, cause I watched some of the direct, but I didn't watch all of it.
So big one. One of the biggest.
Ian?
Big news.
Don't you make fun of that sound clip? Someone put in a lot of time and effort to make that sound clip.
You did a good job with it.
I didn't do it.
Oh, you didn't?
No.
Oh. Bayonetta 3. Sorry, duck.
It's a chick.
Sorry, quackers.
What is a duck?
Bayonetta 3 was the last game announced of the stuff that I think people really want to see from a Nintendo Direct. Metroid Prime 4, whatever the Breath of the Wild sequel is called.
Well, I know it's coming, but they want it, you know.
Right. Bayonetta 3 is a big one because that was announced in 2017 and nothing had been seen of it.
And that was announced for the Wii. It's like, oh, the Wii's coming out. We're going to have it 4 years. Wow.
Was it? I don't think. No, it was announced for the Switch.
Yeah, well, I mean, that's when the Switch came out, 4 years ago.
Oh, you said the Wii.
Oh, God, really? Did I? God, I'm out of it, too.
And
I slept.
And you slept.
I had a dream where the Incredible Hulk was attacking me in the ring, and then it was a battle royal, then someone hit Andre the Giant with a chair, and he fell out the ring.
The Incredible Hulk or Hulk Hogan?
Incredible Hulk.
Oh, okay.
Which is where the name comes from.
Yeah.
That's why Marvel had a tip with him for a while and got a payout of royalty. Did you know that? Sorry, go on.
Hulk Hogan looks like he stinks all the time. Just looks like one of the smelliest motherfucking dudes. This is how I feel. I'm just letting you know how I feel. Anyways, yeah, Bayonetta 3. Are you excited? I am. Moving on. there was Monster Hunter Rise, the expansion. Sunbreak was announced.
Okay, Bayonetta looked interesting to me. He was lost over that. There's like monster battles in it.
Yes, it does look cool. Yeah,
you control different types of monsters. A kaiju, you're a kaiju guy, right?
I'm a kaiju guy.
He just glanced over that. Okay, Bayonetta 3. That looked interesting. And people, you know, obviously, you know, fanboy's dream. You know, looks like the Baroness. I like her just because of that alone. Monster Hunter.
What? I got it. Original Monster Hunter Rise was feudal Japan kind of area.
Mm-hmm.
Era. This looks like it might be like feudal European, this expansion,
okay.
Which could be interesting. It could be a neat way to play off of the same time period or same-ish time period, but do like different styles.
Okay, what about this Chocobo GP thing?
So I'm excited about this. They did not talk about this, though, because I am fairly certain this is just a port of the original PlayStation Chocobo Racing, which I had and I loved, because as a person with a PlayStation, the one thing that I missed was having a kart racer, and I was never into, like, Crash, so I didn't get CTR, so I played Chocobo Racing.
That's adorable.
It's adorable. Like,
there's a little rollerblade one.
But it looks, I'm fairly, they did a remake of the original Chocobo Racing for Switch and then stopped talking about it. Like, again, like 3 years ago, they announced it.
64 player bracket tournament mode. That sounds cool. Tournament
could
mode.
Could be neat.
Could be cool for a kart series.
I also liked it because you collected the same power-ups multiple times, it would upgrade the spell to stronger levels when you would fire off your weapon.
Oh, that's like the Lego Racers.
I believe Diddy Kong did that, too.
That's like Lego Racers. You get the same power-up, and you increase the power-up like four different levels or whatever.
Mod Nation Racers did it as well.
That's a good alternative.
Yeah. It's nice.
You pick if you want defense or offense.
There's a little bit of strategy involved, too.
What about Kirby and the Forgotten Land?
I am really into this. I love the
Kirby
weird
cast away here. What happened to your little guy?
Huh?
What happened to Kirby?
I don't know. We're gonna find out.
Face first on the beach, like Link in Awakening.
But it's post-apocalyptic looking. Like, cute post-apocalyptic looking. Yeah, it's. Just, I mean, he's walking around.
I think it's post-apocalyptic. He's just on a abandoned island.
Yeah. Well,
I don't know if it's apocalyptic.
I'm just saying it gives you that vibe.
He's like going through like a mall that's abandoned.
Yeah.
And it's like, so it's going to be like an adventure.
Okay. I think this is the first truly 3D.
3D adventure. Oh, big crocodile.
3D Kirby game.
Watch out, Kirby. Oh, this looks adorable. It looks adorable, Ian. You solve a little mystery of what's happening here.
Solving a mystery.
Going wherever Triangle Strategy looks interesting just because it's Square Enix looking.
Yeah. And it uses
RPG.
The. It uses the, what do they call, 2D, I can't remember, they have a name for it, but it uses the 2D, 3D graphic style that was first done with Octopath Traveler.
That name.
Good game, though. And they're doing it with the Dragon Quest III remake. I love that visual style, and I do like strategy games. I'm awful at them, but I love to sit there and stroke my chin and be like, that's what we're doing, and then watch everything go to fucking shit. It's great. But I like to feel smart.
You don't have confidence in your strategy, your military strategy, Ian?
No, I'm not a general.
Come on, Ian.
Not a general.
Not enough Civilization playing. You got it. Yeah, so that's what trained me back when I was 15, 14 years old.
Castlevania Advance Collection.
Okay.
Yep, that's out. That was one of their surprise drop announcements where they're like, and it's coming out later today. This is great. It's three of the best Castlevania games. And they're all getting pretty expensive. So this collection is $19.99. Comes with Circle of the Moon, Harmony of Dissonance, and Aria of Sorrow. Aria of Sorrow alone, I think, is like a $50 to $80 game at the moment. Oddly, they included Dracula X, the Super Nintendo version of Rondo of Blood, which is not very good. Mm-hmm. Don't know why they felt they had to tack it on. Hey, it's a freebie. That's cool. But why not the actual version of Rondo of Blood? That is better.
Splatoon, go.
Splatoon 3.
Go.
Splatoon 3. Go. I feel like we're doing an, this is like a workout. I'm sweating. Splatoon 3 was already announced, but they showed more gameplay. It looked like there's going to be like little mechs that people can get into and fight in during the team battles. And they talked a bit about the story mode, which is going to show the return of mammals to the world of Splatoon.
What happened to the mammals?
Well, there's never been any mammals in Splatoon, except for Judd the cat.
Does that explain what happened with Judd? Was it a scientific experiment?
They have talked a little bit about Judd.
What's the lore?
Honestly, I'd have to call in Vonnie on this one. I don't really know.
So, the evolution in the Splatoon world never had mammals. It stopped at...
No, all the mammals disappeared.
Oh, they disappeared?
They disappeared. At one point.
We don't know what happened to them.
No one knows what happened. The world has just been these squid kids running around.
Is there a fossil record?
There are some fossils, yes. The story mode in Splatoon is very, very strange.
Oh, my goodness. I want to know the backstory here. This is going to go to a
very
dark place.
It gets a little weird and dark. Yeah, it does.
Okay, I just want to know the story now.
But, yeah, the only mammals in the Splatoon world are Judd and Judd Jr.
I'm calling an audible on the Switch Online. That's going to be a full topic. I said, screw it. Let's go do a full topic.
Okay. Fine.
Sorry that, Ian. So, that was interesting, right? Anything more on Castlevania? Anything else that came up before I get into my fucking rant? Not rant, but I talk about ActRaiser?
Yeah, I'm going to say a couple more things. Okay. I think one of the games that people are sleeping on that looks particularly interesting to me is the Voice of Cards, Isle Dragon Roars game, where everything is done via card representation, being written by Yoko Taro, who wrote and created Nier 1 and 2, which have got huge fan bases now. I like the art. I like any video game that includes the trappings of tabletop games. So I love video games that use cards. I love video games that show dice or tokens or something like your.
Okay. I never got into card games.
This looks more like a normal RPG, not like a trading card game, but still. And then a game that was not on the direct that I don't want people to sleep on because I think it's really good, Beast Breaker. Okay. It's by the same guy who did Threes, a popular phone game. He did a couple other things. Beast Breaker is super fun. It's a kind of like puzzle game RPG. You play as a little mouse that's very adorable with a sword and a shield, and you fight large creatures, and the creatures are all built out of segments, and you aim the mouse with a line and you fire it off like you would, and the mouse bounces around and hits different things, and it takes the different segments hit points down, and there's all sorts of fun things that are involved.
I think it's interesting, the PR campaign that small rodents have done the past 50 to 60 years.
Oh, yeah.
They used to be known for pestilence and death.
Yep. Now they're just the cutest goddamn
things. Killed most of Europe. And now it's like, oh, we love all mice and rats, and they're the most adorable. I just think it's funny.
They're adorable.
I'm not judging rats or mice one way or the other. If you're a mouse out there, I'm not saying whether that's good or bad that you had this PR thing. Good for you. Make that bank. You know,
I'm overheating. You talk a little bit about ActRaiser.
Something's going on with you. You're like, energy's going like up, and then like it's like you're recharging, then you're coming back. You leaned into me. I felt uncomfortable. It was very, very alpha for you to do. I was scared.
Now I'm leaning back, relaxed, maxed, relaxed, ready to hear about ActRaiser.
So I'm on Twitter, and I know the Nintendo Direct's going on. Sometimes I watch the entire Nintendo Direct from the beginning, and I watch the insanity on the Twitch stream. People just like, you know, boring, or where is Zelda? I'm 14. I don't know what these games are, you know. So I see ActRaiser come up, like someone retweeted. I'm like, what? ActRaiser Renaissance was out that day. The Fire Pro marketing method. It's coming out like right now, and it's out. Usually with Fire Pro, it's like within the month. I like this better. It's out now. So I've been, it's funny because like the past few weeks, ActRaiser has come up as like, you know, a game you want to see a sequel to,
yeah,
or whatever, or like a remake. And it comes up from time to time because we've never had a game, you know, we did have the Sega one that you played. What was the Sega one called? That was like the spiritual wannabe successor.
It wasn't a Sega one.
Was it Sega published?
Maybe, but it wasn't made by them. It was Soul something.
And that wasn't well reviewed.
No, it sucked. I don't want to be too mean, but yeah, I did not like it.
It was Soul something. But anyway, so I didn't even try that because I don't want to be
Soul Serif.
Soul Serif. What is that on Metacritic? Let me see. Metacritic. Soul Serif.
Yeah, it was Sega.
Ian, you know, you got to give me credit once in a while when I know about modern games. Every once in a while, be like, give me a little pat in the head and be like, Pat, you did a good job. I'm going to bring you some chili.
Pat. Soul Metacritic.
53%.
Yeah. It's not good.
Only 20 votes. Okay, so Square Enix is like, you know what? We see this shitty version. We're going to do it. I guarantee that's probably what happened because that was a few years ago that game came out. So this is a remake of the 91 ActRaiser that Quintet developed. And was it just Enix at the time? Was it for the combination?
Just Enix.
Just Enix published. One of my favorite Super Nintendo games. I gave it a glowing full-page review in a certain Super Nintendo guidebook.
Did you give it 5?
I did. I was like 4.5. I was like, if I'm willing to go 4.5 on this, I'm like, I got to go 5 because I can just talk about this game forever. And it's a game where it seems like people that like it really love this game. It's almost, you can't be like, well, I think it's all right. You have to really sink your teeth in this game. If you don't know what it is out there, you listen to the wrong podcast, but it's a combination action platform with sim, building villages up, which is extremely unique. Obviously, I've been waiting forever for a game to do it again before the crappy Sega version. Even the sequel didn't do it. The sequel stripped out the sim part. And why is that important? Because the game has a very heavy-handed, spiritual, religious tone to it. In Japan, you were playing as God, taking on the devil and his minion, Satan. And they changed it to you're the master in Tanzura in North America because of the religious stuff. But it's a story about humanity, and through the villagers, you learn about the follies and beauty of humanity and told through little mini villagers and little stories. And stripping that from the sequel was disgusting because that's what made the game tick. It wasn't just the fact that you're going around fighting demons. You were doing it on behalf of humanity. That chick's gone. You were doing it on the behalf of humanity and helping them out and then sometimes pleading with you. So you're acting as a god, but you're like a benevolent god. You're like, you're being nice.
Right.
And it's about restoration of faith and issues about helping out each other. Like, again, told through the little stories. So like that's why I love the game. Because it had a sort of a bold tone to it, and obviously, the action platforming elements get the job done. They're not great, but they get the job done enough that you get back to the sim building. It's almost like you want to get back to the sim building, like you want to get back to that.
The character design is really good, though. That's the thing that as a person who's never played ActRaiser, I've always loved not for more than 5 minutes. I've always loved the I loved looking at screenshots of it in the magazines.
Yes.
I loved looking... Even
art
part
design
two,
is fantastic.
Even part two, yes. Because, I mean, the sprites still look extremely nice. Like, the art design is just great.
The art design is great. The chubby little cute angel that you used is adorable in the original. And obviously, it is my all-time favorite score in a video game.
Sure.
It is absolutely...
And you're not alone on that.
It is absolutely a brilliant, moving score.
People love that score.
By Yuzo Koshiro, and it was so good it became a fully orchestrated one on CD back in the day. You could find it on YouTube. It's a beautiful, beautiful score.
You and I both love Yuzo. He's the one who did all the all the Streets of Rage soundtracks.
Oh, too. He did?
Yeah. Okay. No, he's top fucking notch.
So okay, we'll get that in common first. I actually never played ActRaiser. It's like me saying I never played Sonic. I always played Sonic. 30 years later. So it's one of those quintessential Super Nintendo games. Like when you think of Super Nintendo games, ActRaiser.
It's one of the first ones I think of because they focused. It's unique, but they also focused on it very heavily early on.
Because it came out November 91. So it was that first run of games in North America.
Gotcha.
So I was shocked but pleasantly surprised to see a remake being done. Overall, I like it. It is not the original, and I'll tell you why, and I'll go into some of the differences and what they added and what they didn't. It's really strip out anything but the differences. So you still have six different like mini continent worlds you have to build up. That's the same. You still start off fighting to sort of gain control originally and get your spirit back into the temple. They're all based around the temples. These are your six worlds here. They expand the gameplay out in this remake. They really lengthened it. They're like, it's like double or triple the amount of time to play through.
Yeah, I know a lot of people said, that it felt more like more than a remake. It felt like a 1.5 or a pseudo sequel.
Yeah, the issue is that they fucked with the battle mechanics too much. In the original ActRaiser, you jump and slash, you slash standing up, you crouch and slash, and you have your magic powers that you eventually get, you earn through building up the towns. This, they changed the single slash into a triple attack. And then in the last one, you could have the option to dash forward. You can dash back with the L trigger, which is a nice dodge thing. But they made one change that I hate. They added an upward thrust, like Zelda 2 upward thrust, to get enemies in the air. It used to be that it was easy to get enemies above you in the original by jumping and slashing, because it was an overhead slash.
Create an arc. Yeah.
Now, when you jump and slash, it does it horizontally.
That's weird.
It makes it an annoyance now to fight off flying enemies. It shouldn't have to be an annoyance to fight off flying enemies. And they're trying to outthink the room, as Frank says. Like, if they just did a straight, we're going to redo how it played with the slashes, and we'll add maybe the dash or the dodge back. Like, I would have been fine. They made the mechanics too cumbersome to update it to a modern audience. That it's not broken. It's now worse than it was even in 91. The simplicity of design was, I think, part of the charm. Now it's gone.
Right.
I don't mind the little updates for modern things where you can turn it off, where every slash you see the hit points come off everyone. I don't like that. It's like they're little minor fucking guys. Who cares? It takes 2-3 hits. That's fine. But that annoyed me. It made combat that much more difficult, where I shouldn't be dying going through this first stage, and I was dying. I was playing on hard. I was like, okay, I'm playing hard, but like I shouldn't have been dying. But they made the magic better. The magic now, you don't just get one spell. You can scroll through the spells as you earn them up and use each one, and you build up the magic points by getting orbs and killing enemies versus getting the scrolls to use them once. I like that. That's a positive change. That's a modern change. It makes it a little bit easier. But changing the mechanics of the sword fighting was just not where it was at for me. And that really, I think, did a disservice to them. The art design, I'm 50-50 on. It looks great for the village. I do not like it for the action platforming parts.
That's what I kind of thought looking at screenshots. I thought the village stuff actually looked great, but
yes,
as time has gone on, I've gotten better about not being such a like 2D art purist. I do prefer it, but it's something, the design just doesn't transfer over super well to 3D.
Yeah, they went almost like half. It looks like a DS game sort of look to it. You know what I mean? Like you can see it looks like clean, but you can still see the pixel edges on stuff. And I'm just like, it was almost like a half measure. You might as well go just all sprite or all 3D. They went like in between, which was weird. I guess that's a style, and I just didn't like that. But so I'm down on the battle stuff. That's worse than the Super Nintendo one. But the village stuff, they added a decent amount to it. And this is what they did, Ian. You're going to like this. Okay, there's one bad part they added. So in the village now, you earn a hero warrior. There's 6 of them that can help defend your village from sieges that happen now. So in ActRaiser, you always fend off in the air from there's usually 4 monster layers. You fend off the flying birds and the demons, right? That's still there. And you can seal them up. Now when you seal them up, though, you have to have the master go inside and do a quick, I mean like quick, 1-minute fight against a mini boss that, honestly, you don't need it. Get it out. It almost like breaks up the game too much before the humans just sealed it themselves. So you have that. But now you have an interesting strategy minigame put in. You build forts up. There's 2 different types of forts so far. There's a gate one on the road that can stop these basically monsters invade on the ground. You're looking overhead. It's a real-time like strategy thing. And you can place these guard towers in the road. You can do arrow ones. And you can also, in real-time, place roadblocks. You can't do once these attacks happen, you can't place the guardhouse, but you can place these roadblocks that then the monsters have to hit away.
So you can slow them down.
You're trying to defend the temple. Once the temple gets destroyed, game over. So you use those in conjunction with placing your basically hero character who has an HP level to fend off this attack. That's an excellent addition to the game. I mean, that's when I was thinking of my own like remake in my head, I would want to do something like that. I wanted there to be fending off attacks. So it
added tower defense type stuff.
A real-time tower defense thing.
Soul Seraph, I think that's the one thing I would give Soul Seraph is they did add that, and I thought that was neat, and people told me at the time that, you know, that's not in normal ActRaiser, and I was like, that's a good idea. It's, unfortunately, it just everything else was not
great. So they beefed out the sim part pretty well. You still have to destroy your old houses with lightning in order to build the bigger ones. That's still there because there's 3 different levels to your town. There's still that stuff. There's still the same stories, but now they added more. They basically beefed this out a lot. Like 2.5 hours, I still did not beat the first stage still. Like on the Super Nintendo, by 2.5 hours in, you're like well into the game.
Sure.
You can complete probably the game in 2.5 hours, I think, if you really go quickly. So like they really beefed it out, but they beefed out too much of the action elements. They really made them bigger. And like I said, the mechanics aren't as good. The score is obviously great. So you could have the option. Yuzo came back and did Yuzo-san. Did a remix. He reorchestrated the original, so he added it to them.
Nice.
But you have the option to change to the original Super Nintendo.
Very good.
That's brilliant. But the update is great.
I love optional soundtracks.
So I recommend this. It's a weird recommendation. I recommend this if you have not played the first one. I almost recommend that you jump in and play this one since you have not played the first one. And you might like it more than me, if that makes sense. You won't be spoiled by the original.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, by the way, I'll say this. I hate the new angel design. I can't stand it. It looks like a freaking, you know, prepubescent boy or girl. I hate that. I like the cute, chubby angel from the original. I'm sorry. I like the little-looking cherub angel from the original. They made it more like modern. But come on. It's less character. You know what I mean? You remember the little cute little angel, the little cute little bug you can see?
Yeah, I know from the screenshots and stuff.
There was something to that. And they did make... This is a modern thing I don't like, but I understand it. They made fighting off... They made the arrows not just shoot straight anymore. They kind of like go towards the target a little bit. They bend a little bit.
Oh.
It makes it simpler.
Sure.
I get it. I don't hate it. It's like 30 years later, maybe that's easier for people to play.
It's just different.
It's fine. Okay, I do recommend it though overall. To me, it's like a 7.5 out of 10. But the original to me is a 10 out of 10. That's the difference.
This reminds me of DuckTales and DuckTales Remastered, which I did not like as a 7.5. However, I've always said that if you've never played the original DuckTales and you have the chance to play the remaster, play it. It's fun.
Sure.
It's just when you compare it to the original, that's where I fall apart on it.
See, it's my DuckTales Remastered, but I liked it better. And I will probably go through more of it. But I mean, the original game was like a 3-hour game at most. This is going to be like an 18-hour game. Like, that's how much they lengthen out. Because, like, to build up your town takes a lot longer.
Sure.
They really added. I think there was, like, 4 sieges, 4 towns. I actually enjoy that part of the game the best. Sieges. The real-time, like, almost military strategy element. That's a pretty cool thing. I'm like, all right, you get a hero character. And then the hero works into the main story at the temple where you communicate. I'm like, okay, I see. You get a nice abs.
Abs.
Health insurance is expensive for many Americans. More than half of Americans are on a high deductible health insurance plan, on the hook for thousands of dollars of deductibles, copays, and sky-high premiums. Many in the U.S. concerned about cost don't have good healthcare options. You either go uninsured or pay through the nose for a high deductible plan with questionable coverage, all because of a broken health insurance system. It's like being stuck with an outdated cable TV plan and not knowing about Netflix. Introducing CrowdHealth. It isn't health insurance. It's a better way to pay medical expenses. CrowdHealth is a community of people who are tired of paying for a broken system, a place where you can get a simple, flexible, and affordable way to pay for your health care. Being in the CrowdHealth community can save hundreds of dollars monthly and put thousands of dollars back in your pocket.
Why CrowdHealth? Well, it's flexible. Membership is a monthly subscription. You can start or stop when it's convenient for you. And it's got simple and transparent pricing, customized to fit your needs. CrowdHealth lowers your monthly healthcare costs, and you can see any doctor you want. And it's simple. Using their app, you can find nearly any doctor in the country ranked from 1 star to 5 stars. You can scan bills and throw them away. CrowdHealth takes it from there. And press a button to receive virtual care anytime, anywhere. And a community of health-conscious members who want to get and stay healthy in return for lower prices. CrowdHealth gets rid of the insurance middleman and passes the savings to its members. 100% of your monthly membership pays for actual healthcare costs, helping the whole CrowdHealth community stay healthy while keeping more money in your pocket.
CrowdHealth is able to offer amazing prices because of its community of health-conscious members. But for a limited time, our listeners get their first month free. And after you've been a member, CrowdHealth will include a fitness wearable. That's 30 days to try risk-free, plus the fitness wearable. Just go to joincrowdhealth.com/fit and enter code CUPODCAST at signup. That's joincrowdhealth.com/fit, promo code CUPODCAST. CrowdHealth is not health insurance. It's a community-powered alternative. Term and conditions may apply. All right, Ian.
Patrick.
I called an audible. This is a main topic.
All right.
So Nintendo Switch Online's been around for what now? Over two years?
Yep.
2019, yeah. 2.5 years?
Yeah.
The last year and a half doesn't count.
I think we just renewed it for the second time, so
at least 2 years.
Yeah, 2 years at least.
So Nintendo Switch Online was what, $20 a year? Which is
it's $20 a year for the normal and then $35 a year for up to 8 people on a family plan.
So $20 a year with the $20 a year, obviously you get online play, and then you got NES and Super NES games. And everyone's like, when are we getting more games? When are we getting more games? Rumor for Game Boy, rumor for N64 games forever. And now we got more than our wish. A startling twist. But first, we'll go through
Startling twist.
I mean, I was surprised. So Nintendo Switch Online is adding a new membership plan in October, late October, which this we predicted that they were going to add more games and then have a tiered pricing. We predicted that because that made economical sense to do that. Because first of all, not everyone's going to want those new games, but those that will pay extra for them. So it makes sense. And you have the option. So N64 games are getting added. The list so far here, Super Mario 64, of course. Mario Kart 64, of course. Star Fox 64, that's a good choice. Yoshi's Story. Ocarina of Time. Wind Back, which we're bringing up more and more as like a hidden gem, so to speak.
That was actually the one that made my eyebrows raise, because I've had a bunch of people tell me, you know, I should play Wind Back, because I like cover-based shooters.
I think 3.5 stars, according to a certain upcoming N64 guidebook, so good review. Mario Tennis, there you go.
Love
that. Dr. Mario 64, and then Sin and Punishment, which never came out in North America.
Yep.
Which I reviewed personally as one of the two, I think, Japanese games I covered. No, I mean, like, I personally cover, covering all the Japanese games in the book. But I covered that game. I think I gave it 4 or 4.5 stars. Really good game. Really good rail shooter.
Yeah.
Really intelligent design. There's melee attacks to it.
It's fun.
In terms of shooting. It's really fun. The story's off the fucking wall nuts. And I think Chris Kohler commented, like, someone did the North American box art for that, which looks pretty cute. They made it a North American box art for
that
picture.
Oh, yeah.
So you're going to get that. It's going to have online play for up to 4 players. So I think I'll be playing Mario Kart 64 versus people more potentially than the new one. Less potential shenanigans happening, you know. Maybe. I don't know.
There's lots of shenanigans, in Mario Kart 64.
But either way, isn't that cool? They're going to do the online. I think that's...
Well, as long as it works well, because it's implemented pretty fucking awfully for the NES and the Super Nintendo.
See, did we play ice hockey versus each other on NES? Did we try that on Switch Online?
No, but I did try to play something with someone, and it was like,
it was just buggy.
Yeah, it's just it.
Was it a connection or just that?
It's the connection. No net code. Right?
Come on, Nintendo. What are we doing here?
It's not.
Get with the times for online play.
It's not amazing.
So, what do you think about the selection of games? So, for the Super Nintendo, for NC4, is it pretty good?
It's not bad.
They're calling it expansion pack membership, which is funny because it's N64 expansion pack.
Yeah,
it's pretty funny. Actually.
I would love to see some of the quirkier stuff, third-party stuff. That's actually the stuff that I tend to enjoy on the 64. I would really like to see Snowboard Kids 1 and 2.
I think you'll get there eventually.
The one that I would like to see that I believe they did say was coming was Pokemon Snap.
Oh, they said that?
Yeah.
Okay, so this picture...
During the thing, they were like, in more games coming, and they ran like 5 games real quick past the screen.
Okay, I'll look that up. And it's for a Switch Online announcement.
And the video. Yeah, one of those was Pokemon Snap.
So, obviously, we're all going to get this. Whether or not this is going to be $25 a year or $30 a year, I think almost everyone's going to put down the money for this.
I have to guess Nintendo and how they usually price things. I have a feeling they'll probably do an extra $5 for the solo membership and an extra $10 for the family.
I'm down.
That's my guess. We'll see.
And there's still going to be more NES and Super Nintendo games added. There's over 100 NES.
Is there going to be more of those added? Did they actually say that?
Yeah.
Okay.
Steven Totilla from Kotaku confirmed that they're still doing they got some in the well left that they don't want to pay through the nose for. People still obviously want Earthbound on there. They want Mario RPG and things like that. But okay, so that's good. You think this is going to affect the retro game market to have these more readily accessible versus the N64 games that have spiked? Well, everything spiked after COVID. But
no, I don't. I really don't think it will.
You don't think it will?
No. There was a time where I might have said I thought it would have, but I mean, just looking back on years of experience of this, I don't think it's going to affect it a whole lot.
Okay, so that was the N64 game announcement. Everyone's like, okay, this is cool. We kind of knew it was coming, but then they dropped a bomb-ish. Sega Genesis games will be included in this expansion pack for Nintendo Switch Online. Sega Genesis games they are licensing for Nintendo Switch. Oh, that's so weird and cool. And the game selection is actually really interesting, which we can talk about.
It's a decent game selection. I don't know why you think it's so weird, though, when this was done on the Virtual Console.
But you had to pay for them. They weren't free.
Sure.
This is like Nintendo saying, we aren't just dominating you. Now we're offering our competitions games for free. That was just a license deal. This is a license deal, but this is a freebie. This is like a Netflix thing.
Well, freebie, you got to pay more for. However,
Don't be contrarian, Ian. This is big news. This is big. This is big, big news.
Big news. I guess I think. I just feel like Sega licensed their shit out everywhere at this point. It's not that.
But it's Nintendo.
All right,
partnering.
All right.
They're holding it.
All right, we've already seen Sonic on a Nintendo system. But the selection is good.
Wet blanket, Ian. Okay, the selection is good. Want to run through this, Ian?
Yeah, Castlevania Bloodlines, thumbs fucking up. Contra Hardcore, absolutely. Dr. Robotnik's Mean Bean Machine, yes, sure. Good Puyo Puyo game. Echo the Dolphin, maybe not. Golden Axe, love it. Gunstar Heroes, excellent.
Musha,
not as into Musha as other people are, but it's still a good shooter. I just don't think it's nearly worth
Fantasy
that much
Star
money.
Fantasy Star
4, great RPG. Rystar, good stuff. Shining Force, way to go. Shinobi 3, yes indeed. Sonic 2, fantastic. Oops. Streets of Rage 2, absolutely.
And Strider.
Which is fantastic. That was my favorite Genesis game for the longest time.
But this is like a hardcore retro gamer's game list. That most of these games are extremely expensive games.
Yes, they are.
That's why it's nuts.
Yeah.
Musha, Hardcore, Bloodlines is now expensive. Phantasy Star 4 is, I think, expensive.
Phantasy Star 4 goes for about 100. Bloodlines, I think, complete, especially if it's the clamshell version, is over 200.
I got it sealed, but I have the cardboard box.
Over 200. Contra Hardcore is definitely probably about 70. Golden Axe, it's a couple tenors. Rystar, probably not too bad, maybe 30. Maybe.
Look that up. But the point is, like, this isn't just like the regular garbage stuff, you know what I mean? This is a few tiers above that, I think.
No, this is a fairly well curated.
Yeah, this
collection
is like this
to
is,
offer.
Oh, Rystar is expensive now.
Is
Ian.
It now?
Complete.
Everything
someone's,
is
complete. Someone's asking for 200. Holy shit!
All right, well there
ooh,
we go.
I think I own that. So anyway, so that was surprising to me, and then you see the select, and it's just like this isn't all the crap you would find on those crappy at games ones. This is like a tier above that. I don't think any of those had Mushu on it.
Musha
or Gunstar Heroes is expensive too, right? That's a $100 game easily, isn't it? Gunstar Heroes?
It used to be really expensive, then it got really, really reasonable. It was only like $20 for a while, and now I think it's probably expensive again.
It got reasonable for some reason? $80 just for the fucking cart.
Okay, yeah, so it's not reasonable anymore.
$175 or best offer for complete. Wow. So, yeah, I guess that blew up a lot of people. That fact, I was ecstatic to see that, just because it's like, wow, this is becoming the Netflix style thing that people were wanting it to be. It's closer.
And like I said, it's not a bad selection.
Four consoles now? You got Genesis games before Game Boy, Ian. That's a weird feeling, isn't it?
It is. Very strange.
Does Nintendo just not think people are interested in the Game Boy? You think that's what it is?
I don't know.
So many games they can put on it from the Game Boy. No, they never talk about the Game Boy. They never do anything with it anymore.
I don't know. It's very weird. I don't need Game Boy on there, but
they got them laying around.
Yeah. I mean, I buy Game Boy games still.
There's months where they're not putting on NES streaming games. Put on some Game Boy games.
The Mario games on there are great. I mean, Mario Land is excellent. Short. Six Golden Coins is great.
Give me the original baseball. Fuck it.
The Wario games are good. I still pop the original baseball in every once in a while. I usually get about four innings in and I go, okay, that's all I need. And I turn it off.
It's like playing black box baseball. It's cute to play
it's
a little
cute.
Bit. But then
it,
you're
it,
done.
It is. It's adorable.
It's one step above like little handheld toys you get from the little.
I would rather play the handheld toy. I will play that
those,
all the way
those
through.
Weird toy shops that had the little handheld like baseball toys and stuff. But then we get to the hardware announcement, which is, again, maybe just Genesis alone. Okay, Ian, I'm with you. What's the big deal? Now you have Nintendo saying, we're going to offer you first the N64 controller, the same way they did the Super Nintendo and NES ones for Switch. Through you had to be, what is it called, Nintendo Club member?
No, a Nintendo Online member. You just have to have...
Fucks Online.
Okay. Yeah, they basically, it's if you have to be have the... They won't sell them to you if you don't have the online service in an attempt to try to dissuade scalpers.
Which makes sense. I think they put a limit on those anyway, I think they did in the past. So the N64 controller is... that's a cool idea. To have that, I'll probably... Oh, it's a real D-pad, which is nice. I like the D-pad on N64. I'm going to pick that up. So then they also hold up next to it a Genesis controller. And that's where it gets super strange, that Nintendo is directly selling a Sega Genesis controller to you. That's bizarro land. If you think that's bizarro land, I don't know what to tell you. I can't remember a company saying, we're going to sell our competition shit or ex-competition stuff. There you go.
None of this feels weird to me.
I feel... Okay. You're jaded. I think it's weird.
I think you're still living in the console wars.
I'm back in 93, Ian. 92, 93. So they're going to sell you. There's two different versions. They're telling you a Sega Genesis controller. Three-button one for some reason in North America. And then you're lucky.
Pause. I don't know why they keep fucking doing this. They need to stop with the fucking three-button controller. They did it with the fucking Mini. They're doing it here. You're kneecapping yourself with the amount of games you can put on here. It's dumb. Unpause.
Okay. So the six-button one is what most people prefer.
Yes.
People have nostalgia for, I guess, the original chunky-ass three-button controller.
Why?
But it plays like ass compared to the six-button
one. The buttons never feel like the buttons get real loose. Like, they never feel like there's a good
press.
They
put it at the wrong angle. The start button's in the middle of nowhere. There's no... It's...
I'm a Sega boy. Sega boy here.
Sonic controller.
I don't like the original Sega three-button controller.
Sonic controller.
It's not good. The six-button is great, though. It's one of my favorites.
We all played our Ultra Beasts with it and Moonwalker and original Sonic. But it's not a good controller overall.
No.
It's average at best. So I'm guessing what you can probably do is go through this. There's probably a way that you'll be able to maybe set up a Japanese an extra account on your Switch in order to access the page to get the six-button one. Maybe. If you want it. Are you interested in getting the six-button one for your Switch?
No, I'm not interested in any of these fucking wireless controllers.
This is why, though.
Take up space.
Because you can get these sort of controllers already. You can get Bluetooth controllers for $30 only.
Our friends at Retro-Bit do...
Yes.
They do licensed remakes of all the Sega controllers, and they're great.
Maybe Retro-Bit's doing these. We don't know. But anyway, the whole point is that these are going to sell because they're Nintendo branded. I will buy the N64 one as an idiot. I'm not going to buy the Genesis one, but I will buy the N64 one, even though I'm an idiot because I could connect that through other. There's other ones out there. I can, they got me for that. But $50 is too much, especially for the Genesis one.
It is.
That's way too much.
Too much.
If you want to make the argument, then again, it's too much for the N64 one. You can buy USB N64 controls that are decent for $15, $12. USB, obviously, but they're not. The joysticks don't cost anything. We're not in that age anymore. Well, the joysticks cost
no.
But again. Nice to see this. Really cool. This gives puts a nice pep in its step to the Switch Online, which a lot of people are complaining about. You know, they were putting out some interesting titles still, but they're a lot of the heavy hitters that weren't coming out anymore for NES or Super Nintendo.
Yeah.
So, but you're down for this? You're gonna be playing some Streets of Rage 2 multiplayer with me?
I am down.
Let's
for
play
it.
Some Golden Axe. Let's seriously play some Golden Axe.
I'm down for it for the, it's not going to be an insane amount extra. There's enough on here that I'll go and screw around with Mario Kart 64.
I think it'll be $30 for one person. I think that's what it's going to be. You don't think it's going to be 30? You think it'll be 25?
I don't think 30 is out of pocket.
No.
But knowing how Nintendo generally values their DLC and things like that. They've always done their expansion packs for relatively cheap. They've done their online for cheaper than other companies. I have a feeling they'll do this expansion cheaper than other companies would. So, I mean, like I said, I could be wrong, but I think it's going to be an extra $5 for the solo, and I think it's going to be an extra $10 for the family.
For the extra $5, it's going to be like they're going to get probably 90% of the people to pay the extra $5. So,
yeah.
Like, think about how many people... How many millions upon millions of dollars that is alone. So we're probably more than make up for the licensing of the Genesis games. And then obviously some of these are, Winback is third party. The rest aren't that they're offering.
Sun and Punishment's first party, right?
Yes.
Yeah.
It was, yes. I mean, they published it. Yeah.
Okay.
I'm trying to remember who did the dev on that, but they published it. It's a Nintendo IP.
Okay. That's...
Because they came out with the Wii one.
Yeah.
It's a Nintendo sequel. Right. So, but I think Winback's the only one here that's not.
Oh, that's right. That's why I'm screwed up. It's a treasure game.
Okay.
So is Gunstar Heroes. That makes sense. Hold on. Winback. Koei
Tecmo.
Okay, yeah.
Well, back then, was it?
It was just Koei.
Okay, so they have a good relationship with them with lots of other stuff on NES.
And then, yeah, I knew there was someone well-loved behind Sin and Punishment and its treasure.
Yeah, I'm happy. Let's get Game Boy and Turbo Graphics. Come on, Konami, you gotta do something with those properties.
Come on, do the locomotion with me.
This portion of the CU podcast is sponsored by Retro-Bit.
Retro-Bit has partnered up with Elden Pixels, an indie game developer, to publish the NES version of their game Always Awakening. Originally released on Steam for PC, now you'll get to see what happens after that version. There are new rooms to explore, new challenges, and so much more. In true Retro-Bit fashion, they've made it into a collector's edition that comes with plenty of exclusive collectibles. on top of their high-quality work, this Always Awakening game was remastered to fit the NES perfectly. They've actually taken the game and had to rework the whole thing specifically for this release. So you know you're getting some quality old-school gameplay right here. In Always Awakening, you traverse dangerous dungeons, meet interesting and fun characters, and explore the world in this 8-bit adventure game. And in true Retrobit fashion, they are doing something totally different in what you don't see other companies doing. They are making what they call a digital version of Always Awakening that combines aspects of both physical and digital games.
In this digital, the collectible and retractable Zoe 8GB USB contains the ROM but still includes exclusive extras and displayable packaging, all in order to provide a digital experience while continuing to support these indie game developers. But if you want to keep it old school and stick to the classics, there is also the NES cart version available that comes with all kind of collectibles, including a full-colored manual, just like we remember. We used to have that. Whichever way you're planning to go, right now is the time to reserve yours as they are available for pre-order now until October 17th. Visit retro-bit.com/always-awakening to see all the places offering both versions while they're available. And follow them on social media at Retrobit Gaming to stay updated on all their new releases. Ian, did something happen this past weekend you want to talk about?
I worked my last day at Luna Video Games.
Two locations.
Two locations.
Chula Vista and El Cajon.
Chula Vista, El Cajon.
Ex-Voltaire Street.
Ex-Voltaire.
Ex-Newport.
Putting an end to 15 years of video game retail. I don't think I've ever done anything that long. I think my total time in restaurants might have been 13 years, 13 to 14 years. So it was close, but certainly I've never worked at any one place.
Do you want to explain
that long?
It wasn't that long after you moved to San Diego, correct?
No, it wasn't. So I moved to San Diego in 2005. I was working summer of 2005. I was working for Luna. My first official job at Luna was dropping flyers on cars for the 2005 holiday season. And then I officially started working at Luna like shifts in, I think, summer of 2006. And I think I was full time at Luna by 2007.
So obviously you were a game collector before that, so you're familiar with retro games. And so when you saw a game store, you're like, okay, let's see if they have work.
So what happened was, is when I moved to San Diego first, I lived in the Mission Hills area for a couple of months. And the landlord was, she was a real see you next Tuesday. And my girlfriend at the time and my roommate had just had tons and tons of issues with her. So we started looking. And my first job here was delivering flowers. And every time I went into Ocean Beach, I loved it. And they all loved Ocean Beach, so we moved in. Our new landlord, who she was very nice, screwed up our electricity. So we were without electricity for like 5 days. And I needed something to do. And I had my DS fully charged, but I hadn't played it in a while. So right. I was like, fuck it. I'm going to go try to... Mario Kart DS had just come out. And I was like, I'm going to go try to find a copy of this. And... looked in the phone book. That's how long ago this was.
Wow.
Still looked in the phone book.
You don't want an internet look up on the internet still.
I mean, this was well before smartphones. We had no electricity.
5 years before. Yeah.
We had no electricity for years. Internet hookup. So I looked in the phone book and Luna had an ad there. And when I like tried to find out where it was like literally a block down and like two blocks over. So I walked and I picked it up. And of course I asked him if he, you know, needed any help. He was like, no. So I just kept going there for a while. And eventually the one day I walked in, he was like, so you want a job?
No, that's like, how it happened?
Yeah. No, that's exactly how it happened. He's like, you want a job? And I was like, yeah. Because when Luna started, the first 3 years of Luna, Traeg was the only employee there. And he worked every day.
And when did he start it?
2003.
Three. Okay.
So he worked every single day. Took like, I think in the first 3 years, he's not lying. He took like, I think 3 days off during the year. And then he used to close for a week between Christmas and New Year's.
Gotcha. So he wouldn't even take off like Sundays or one day a week.
Nope.
Mondays.
No, he was he was a dedicated small business owner and was there all the time. There was a guy named Rhett who he had cover a couple of shifts for him, but Rhett was never an official employee.
Gotcha.
So I was the first employee. And yeah, I mean, where do you go from there? I mean, that's...
I mean, you saw a lot in 15 years, obviously. You saw the retro... Well, in 2006, that's when, you know, the Wii comes out, Virtual Console, eBay gets bigger, YouTube gets... 2006 was the year, I would say, that's where everything turned. YouTube gets bigger, you know, James puts out his AVGN videos on there. People really start discovering, rediscovering their games a lot more. Like, all this stuff happened around there.
Yeah, and it didn't happen instantly. You know, the first couple of years at Luna, we did well. But, you know, there was only one location. You know, one employee was really all Treg could afford. And we were still catering to a crowd of people that were very much like I was in the late 90s. People who were just like, this is what interests them. There was not... there were obviously places online where you could go and talk about retro games. Nintendo Age existed.
Sure.
You know, a lot of the old early Nintendo fan sites were starting to fall apart. But, you know, TSR's NES Pit was long gone by then. There were places, but it hadn't really entered the mainstream. So it was a very small, very... I don't know how to say it. Very boutique-y.
Yeah, and plus, back then, the price scales were radically different than what they are now. There were expensive games, but not in the scale now and not in terms of the quantity of those games. The average NES game in 2006 compared to now, are you kidding me?
When I first started there, Nintendo 64s were $25.
With a controller?
With a controller.
Yeah, that sounds about right.
Maybe even 20. I know they were 20 at one point in time, but I think by the time I started there, they were $25, one controller.
Still in the GameCube era.
NESs were $49.99. Super Nintendos, I think, were $69.99. And yeah, it was crazy because I think PS2s were like $150, which is actually not that far from where PS2s are now.
Yeah, but they dipped.
Dipped for a long time. Yes.
You can't count the last year and a half. It doesn't make any sense.
I think during my time there, PS2s were as cheap. I think they got as cheap as $39 or $49.99. You know, Sega Genesis systems, I think, were $29.99.
But average game prices were down. You had, obviously, some game collectors, but it wasn't like we're getting all of this to make money. It was more just still like, I want to play stuff or collect stuff.
Yeah.
Or gather stuff.
Yep, there were people always looking for rarities, but it wasn't to flip it. It was still people
like
largely,
crazy assholes like me walk in and want Baby Boomer.
It was largely people still just buying for their collections. It hadn't turned into an alternate revenue source, you know, for people or anything like that yet.
Sure. So that's around, you know, 2006 early era. I first saw you in 2008 that summer. And I believe I bought the Baby Boomer and maybe Prince of Persia or whatever I bought. I bought a few games there.
Right.
Some of the very uncommon ones I still needed. You know, like, who's this crazy asshole with the short hair? Then obviously you saw a lot change, you know, like that was like 1.0 Luna. And then you probably got to like a 2.01 within probably like 5 years. Did you see like another change?
Yeah.
Waves, sort of switch.
Yeah. I mean, I would say that by the time the 360 and the PS3 were in full swing, I felt like, in a way, I feel like Generation 7 brought a lot of people back into video games. We started doing a lot of business for 360 and modern stuff, as well as the retro stuff. Nintendo still remained popular. Nintendo 64 hit a kind of like a feverish peak, probably around 2011, 2012. It's always been popular, but you know, that's where I first started to kind of notice it's the 20 years after it comes out sort of thing that makes it very popular. But the first few years, Nintendo and Super Nintendo were always the popular focus. And then as we move on into like 2012 and on, things start to slowly change. Nintendo starts to get a little less popular by around 2014, I would say.
All Nintendo stuff?
Just the original Nintendo.
Oh, NES.
Yeah, starts to get a little less popular by around 2014. Super Nintendo, you know, gets very popular. N64 is an absolute frenzy.
Sure.
It was always the Nintendo systems that got really popular. But I did see a couple of weird... there's a couple of weird, like, moments there, too. There was a moment where everyone got into Sega Master System. I remember that very clearly. Even you did. I mean, you finished your set.
I got out before everyone else got in.
But a lot of people got really into Sega Master System. That was one of the more interesting things for me to watch was as Nintendo collecting got more popular and the prices started to raise exponentially, there were people who were trying to find the next reasonable full set to collect that they could do without having to compete with a bunch of other people. And for like 2 years, I was getting constantly people looking for Sega Master System stuff. It had a lifespan of about 2 years. No one asks for Sega Master System stuff anymore. I probably get as many people looking for Atari 2600 games as I do
because
Sega
no one
Master
had it
System
when it
stuff.
Came out here. Right. I mean, I had a Sega Master System 2. I only had like two games, so you know, you can't even say I really had it as a childhood system. So, and obviously the pandemic stuff nowadays that rebounded a lot of prices of the 80s and 90s stuff.
Yeah, it did.
Which is weird.
Nintendo was on a pretty...
It was last legs, NES.
NES, yeah. NES was on its was on a downward slope from 2017 to 2019. You know, the expensive games were still expensive, but you saw... I mean, it was a very noticeable drop-off in interest, and you did start to see some of the rare games that were not good games or important games start to kind of... come down in price a little bit.
And that's how you know the general interest is going away.
Right.
If someone's not coming and buying Tecmo World Cup Soccer, you know, like an uncommon sports game that's hard to find.
Right.
That's just going to sit there. Yeah. That means there's less collectors looking for it.
The first half of my time at Luna, if I had a copy of Tecmo Cups, or the first third of my time at
Tecmo
Luna,
Cup Soccer, yeah.
If I had a copy of Tecmo Cup Soccer game, someone who was in there looking for it would be like, ooh, I want that. Because they weren't just looking for stuff to jog their memory. They were looking for things to collect.
Or Bases Loaded 4,
right.
You know, or something like that, where it's,
right.
like, it's a rare game.
Or
that, like,
I always
no
bring
it
up at, like, fucking Supercars or whatever that Super yeah. Sprint game is. Like, that's rare as hell. I've seen it literally once in the store.
No one grew up with it, but if you were looking for that game, it's just to, you know,
yeah.
complete
I've
it.
Seen Panzer Dragoon, like, five times come through. Panzer Dragoon Saga yeah. come through the store, like, five times. I've seen that Supercars game come through once. It sold for 20, because who gives a fuck about it anymore?
Yeah.
You know, because it came in after that popularity.
Did working at the store, how did it change your relationship to games? Like, was there like a difference in how you looked at video games before and after you started working there?
If I wasn't kind of already on my way out of collecting by the time I started working at Luna, Luna really put the nail in the coffin of me considering myself a collector.
Why do you think that?
I guess because I was around it all the time.
Too much familiarity.
Too much familiarity.
Breeds, what is it? Resentment.
Yeah, I was around it all the time, and obviously, I still buy games. Technically, if you wanted to give me a label, sure, you could say I'm a video game collector. I still buy Game Boy games. I still buy PC Engine games. I like those collections. I like to work with those collections. But you know, going into my job at Luna, I was. When I moved out here, when I was in Buffalo, I was a collector like anyone else, like you, like any of the big video game collectors. I was buying for all systems, buying weird things, buying boxed systems, buying, you know, mm-hmm. I was looking for anything that had to do with video games. Sure. When I moved out here, I had less space. I had less time to devote to it. The move of my NES games out here was a pain in the ass. I hated it. I realized what a fucking weight this was that I sure. had attached to myself. Yeah. What a weight it was that I had attached to myself. And I was poor as fuck when I moved out here, too. So it was a combination of, like, this is getting to be a pain in the ass to lug around. Prices of these are going up. I started selling off some of my collection. And I have realized that I'm a very specific type of person when it comes to a collection. If I start selling off pieces of a collection, the whole thing falls apart. Once I realize how easy it is to get rid of a couple things, I go, let's just fucking get rid of all of it.
Yeah, there's a lot of people that think that way.
So, yeah. So it was just like slowly over time. I was like, I guess I'm getting rid of all of this, you know, stuff.
Did your interaction with more and more collectors turn you off working in the store? Did you see something
yeah,
in them that you didn't want to see in yourself?
I don't. There was a, like I said, I was already kind of on my way out, but it didn't hurt to see people obsessing over very weird things. You know, a person who was one of the first people you knew out here. I clearly remember the day that I thought of, and I'm not saying I came up with it, but it was the day that it came into my head, the term shelf collector. It's a term that's used, but it's a term that popped into my head the day I met this one dude.
Because they said, What is the thing they
said? Because he said, I asked him if he had, I said something about a game being good, and he said, oh, really? And I said, yes, you don't play them? And he goes, no, I just think they look nice on my shelf.
Yes, I remember that.
And that has stuck with me for a long, long time, and that is, that really, I hate to say it, and I don't want to give this person too much importance, but that really was a pivotal thing in my thinking of video games and how I thought about them and collecting in general was, you know, you got people, because for me, it seems so strange to me. I'm not trying to be like, I'm a true collector, but it never occurred to me before then, call it being young and naive, that people would buy things that they had no interest in using for their intended purpose.
You weren't on Nintendo age enough like I was.
Right. Well, and I think I kind of avoided that because I caught a whiff of it without realizing what was going on. But sure. I didn't realize that there was a lot of people who bought, you know, collections to kind of have, a status symbol. And I don't care how you collect. You can collect how you want. But it just that really threw me off. And for, you know, especially early on in the early ages of NES, like NES collecting and Super Nintendo collecting getting popular at Luna, I always kind of divided the people up into two camps in my head. The people who are buying to buy and the people who were buying to play. And I treated them differently. The people who were buying to buy, I would, because I didn't want to hear them fucking say it. Can I see some copies? Whenever, someone would come in that I knew was like that, I'd just go and get a bunch of copies and put them on the counter and be like, pick whichever
because
one.
Because they wanted the nicest looking
one.
Yeah,
yeah. And, you know, it just, like, when I say I treated them differently, I don't mean it better or worse, but I learned how to handle different customers in different ways. These people weren't buying it to play it, so if there was a rip on it or if there was a nicer looking copy, I just knew to go and get it automatically and put it in front of them.
I never asked for multiple copies of stuff. Anyway. Was okay, so that's like that. We talked about the stuff that might have turned you off a little bit or changed the way of thinking. What were the ways that interaction with customers made you, I guess, either reignite a love for certain games or consoles or made you look at video games in a positive way? I'm sure there's those stories as well. Or,
I mean, video games in a positive way. I saw a lot of people, I met a lot of people who were very nice, who obviously, you know, through collecting, it was helping them become social. It was helping them find people with common interests to talk about. I definitely did get back into playing games. Luna really helped me enjoy. It's weird to say, but my time at Luna helped me enjoy playing games again because I was so kind of weirdly turned off by the collector stuff. I got more into, you know, taking games home and trying them. I played a lot of 360 games because of Luna. Luna and me getting that 360 for Pac-Man Championship Edition is what sparked at least a 4 or 5 year period of me getting very much into mainstream and modern games again. That's kind of fallen off. But, you know, it really got me to realize that retro is not always better. There's a lot of current stuff. Talking to a lot of people who play a lot of different games got me to try a lot of different things that I might not have tried.
Sure.
You know, I remember when Call of Duty Modern Warfare 4 came out. Yes, I worked at Luna during the launch of that. Like, when I worked at Luna, the PlayStation 2 was still a current fucking console. It was in it. I mean, the 360 was coming out that
PS2
year.
PS2 and GameCube.
But PS2 and GameCube were still current consoles. Anyway, but I played stuff like Call of Duty 4. I tried RPGs that I wouldn't normally try. I played sports games and Maddens. I started playing games online in ways that I normally wouldn't. It was neat. It was there was kind of a renaissance of me actually playing games to enjoy them and not worrying so much about collecting them.
So now you've done your time. Then you did your bid, like your sentence. What are you going to miss the most about? Not working in a game store.
Well, I mean, if I have to be honest, there is parts of it I'm going to miss. I was thinking about this a little bit last night. So much of my life has been attached to Luna. I'm 39 years old. 15 years of that has been working in the same spot. So it's you know, they always talk about work-life balance. And if I associate a lot of my life with work, I probably did not have a great work-life balance at Luna. But, I mean, I met Vani through Luna. I met you through Luna. My marriage is because of Luna. This podcast is because of Luna. Most of the friends that I talk to on a regular basis these days, my friends Adam, my friend Lincoln, these are people that I met through Luna and would not have met at any time in any other way. Luna kept me in California. Luna gave me and this is really more Traeg than Luna, but obviously the two are interlinked. Gave me a place to feel like I belonged after my relationship exploded in, I don't know, 2007, 2008. If it wasn't for working at Luna and for Traeg opening up his social circle and, you know, giving me more hours and more responsibilities there, I would not have had an anchor in San Diego and I would have left. Nothing that I am doing now is likely to have occurred if I did not get that job at Luna. I mean, it was a hugely integral part of everything I did. There was a lot of things that I hated about Luna. But now that I'm out of there officially, I don't really... It's crazy. Now that I don't have to worry about it anymore, like, a lot of that stress just melted off. I really thinking about it, I don't even want to think about the bad shit because the good shit was extremely beneficial for me. And I don't have to worry about the bad shit anymore. So why am I going to spend too much time thinking about it?
You don't have to worry about a falcon attacking you from the back room.
Don't have to worry about a falcon attacking me in the back room. I will say this, though. I am the things that I'm most excited about not having to do anymore. I am so excited to never have to do another fucking video game trade-in again in my life.
You just didn't like to negotiate those, or?
You know, it wasn't. You could always have bad ones. You know, you could always have situations that went poorly. But really the last year of, I was ready to kind of leave Luna, you know, a few years ago. And then, especially with the pandemic and everything like that, you know, Traeg put together that fundraiser for the employees. He found us hours. He got us health insurance and, you know, really made sure that we were taken care of during that time. So it was easy to stick around once COVID began again. But once things opened back up, we're now living in a very different world. And I'm sure people in all customer service fields will say this, that things have just been vastly different since the reopening. People have gotten way touchier. But every trade-in has become this very delicate balance of back and forth. And they always feel like they're just seconds away from going south. And it's tough because I want to give, you know, people want a lot of money and we pay people a lot of money, but a lot of people are selling off this stuff because COVID has completely wiped out their finances and destroyed so many people's bank accounts that it just got something that was, that could always go tense now became
starts tense.
Yes, gotcha. Exactly. It doesn't become tense. Every transaction starts on like a 5 out of 10 instead of a 1 out of 10.
Because now this is an extra money. This is money people need to live.
This isn't, I found this in my garage. Oh, sick. You're going to give me $100. I've got beer for a couple weeks. This is, I need money to live. I need money to pay rent. And I got tired of it. And I say this truthfully and honestly, Traeg's buyback prices throughout all of COVID have been extremely generous, especially the N64 buyback prices. There were multiple times where he was offering like $70 for an N64.
Wow.
Yeah.
Okay.
And I mean, because we were selling them and we were selling them for $120, but I mean, so early on, people were very, very appreciative. But as time went on and these things started to get more and more expensive, it wasn't so much Traeg was trying to get stock in. Now people were looking at it as thinking, well, this is what I should be paid for it. Sure. And we've got to make profit. You know, there's only...
got to pay employees. You got to keep the lights on.
We got to make overhead. A profit margin somewhere.
It's capitalism.
So it got sad. It got sad, and I was very stressed out. I started every day extremely stressed out.
You never told me this stuff before. It's the first time you told me.
There were many, many days where I woke up and my stomach just hurt, and I didn't want to go in. And Traeg and I even talked about that. He's like, dude, he's like, I understand. It's tough. you know.
Because now you're thinking, because now it's feeling more like a freaking pawn shop and people are desperate. That's what you mean.
Yeah, that's exactly what it kind of came down to. And, you know, I'd get so stressed out that I wouldn't really enjoy seeing the regulars anymore because customers would come in and, like, they're nice people. But if I'm if a regular comes in, and I don't want any regular who maybe thinks this is them to get upset, but if a regular comes in, there's already that, well, you're always happy to see them, but they're probably going to be talkative. How are you feeling about being talkative at that point in time? You know, it's not like calling up a friend where you both kind of mutually agree, okay, sure, we're going to talk to each other.
You feel obligated to talk.
Right, you feel obligated to talk.
Sure.
That's not a bad thing at work. I mean, that's just part of a job when you're in customer service. You are obligated to talk. So when a regular comes in, you know, you might not always be as happy to see them as you were 2 weeks ago when you saw them, but it's still better than seeing a non-regular.
Sure.
What sucked was post-COVID in these high-stress times, these regulars coming in, and you want to, like, have a conversation with them. You want to, like, chat with them and be nice, but you're fucking burnt out. You're exhausted. You've got nothing to say. It gets tough. It got tough.
It's interesting. You didn't bring this stuff up before. You didn't have to, but I haven't been to the store in years. So yeah. I would not have seen the change, you know, the past couple of years.
In terms of not talking, I really need to get this out there too. I don't talk a lot. I don't. I do this podcast and I do another podcast. And I feel like as I get older, I feel like I have less and less to say. And I'm totally happy just not talking about anything that's personal, which is weird. But I don't.
You're my friend.
I know. But are even you? My friends, I've become more quiet as I've gotten older. So, yeah. Anyway, I mean.
To put a cap on this.
Yeah.
I mean, so you had a 15-year run, which is like 40% of your life, something like that.
Yeah, man, it's nuts.
It's a lot.
15-year run. Like I said, responsible for a lot of the good in my life. Responsible the past few years for a lot of the stress in my life, but that's over now. And I'm still going to shop there. As a matter of fact, I've got to go in this weekend and pick up something that came in the day after my last day that I had been waiting to come in.
Wow.
So I'm going to be there this weekend.
Maybe once this all clears up, we can do another appearance. We can do a little, that can be fun.
Yeah. And I think, you know, anyone who's been in San Diego, who's shopped there, you know, Treg is still there. The guy who's replacing me, Sawyer, is Treg's brother. He's really great, really friendly, very dryly funny and awesome to talk to. You know, support it, you know, just cause I'm not there anymore doesn't mean that Luna's not there, but it's going to be weird.
And for those who are going to ask about the good old segment, Tales from the Game Store?
No, probably not, because there's just not a lot of oil left in that well. I was saying to Pat, you know, yesterday, he asked, well, you know, you haven't done one in a couple of years. When I say I checked out the past year, I really did. Maybe if I'm sitting around and I'm thinking, you know, stories will come back to me. But I just, my goal the past couple of years was to get to work, get through the day, and get home. And I did not try to actively remember much of any of it.
You need time to breathe.
Yeah.
You're going to need a little, like some months to be like, all right, I got to separate out from that.
Right. So
it's a big deal when you quit a job from that long. I didn't have a 15-year job, but when I quit my day job, I took several months to recover. You remember how long it took me to recover.
Yeah. It's going
to
be a few months before I feel on top. It's part of the reason why I'm not doing COVID concerns are one, but it's part of the reason why I'm not really doing any of the conventions this fall is like, I've got a new job. I'm training to take on a title in January. I want to get used to the new job without
King Ian?
Having, yeah. without having
a
to
new title.
Like a new position.
Oh.
I want to settle into my life a little bit because it's just so drastically different now than it was.
All right. Well, you know, it was nice to walk in and see. I should have came in the last day. I probably should have just said hi to you, but
it's fine.
I haven't been since like 2018 at least. I don't think I've been there.
Well, it's weird. I mean, stock-wise right now, you could walk in on a Monday and be incredibly disappointed and then come in on a Tuesday and find everything you need. Like, because all the good stuff gets bought up so quickly that, like, we either have lots or nothing.
Okay, one last thing. Outside of the NWC card, what was the most memorable trade-in ever?
My favorite trade-in? This is actually one that I can answer. My favorite trade-in was the old guy who came in, this would have been at the La Mesa location, and sold me two Vectrexes, one of them boxed complete, the
3D imager,
and what was
I think, one or two games shy, not counting like Mr. Boston, one or two games shy of a complete Vectrex game set, all complete in the box with their overlays. And the reason I remember it is because he was incredibly friendly, very nice. He had a... I can't remember what it was. There was like an LCD game in there that he gave me. He was like, oh, I'm not going to take this home to sell it. You can just have it. And I was like, thanks. But the story behind it was cute. I was like, why do you have... And he had doubles of some of the games, too. I was like, why do you have two Vectrexes? And he was like, oh... Because like I said, this was an old man.
Yeah.
An elderly individual. He was like in his mid to late 70s. And he was like, oh, well, I was into technology when I was, in my youth. He's like, and I worked in technology and so did my wife. And I got a Vectrex and we both loved it. And my wife and I used to argue all the time over who would get to play the Vectrex. So that one's mine and that one's hers. Great. And we had a long coffee table. He's like, and we had comfortable chairs at either end of the coffee table. And he's like, we just sat at opposite ends with our Vectrexes. Wow. And he's like, and with games in the middle. And it was just, I mean, it's simple, but it's like my favorite trade-in story. Very cute.
I wish I got it. Chance to get some of those. Also, by 84, as an aside, they were starting to clear out the Vectrex stuff, I think. So if you didn't get them up to that point, they're probably a lot cheaper.
Yeah.
After the crash. But, well, you know, thanks for sharing that, Ian. That was very, very poignant and nice. I'm proud of you, buddy.
Thanks.
I'm proud of you.
I appreciate it.
I'm gonna miss our 2-hour conversations that we used to have pre-podcast with you, where you're like, when is this guy going to fucking leave and get out of the store?
Yeah, I mean, it'll be interesting to see what my my knowledge is of third of like AAA games at this point, because a lot of my knowledge comes from that. I get a lot of video game news from Twitter, but I mostly follow indie stuff. It was already getting to the point at Luna where like someone would trade in a game, and I'd be like, oh, I guess this game got released. And I wouldn't know about that stuff until something at Luna tipped me off about it. So I have a feeling I'm going to get a lot less knowledgeable about
your price expertise on retro stuff is going to plummet.
Yeah, that's
mine actually, has the past years, but like I try to keep up, but like yours is going to be gone.
Yeah, and I might try to keep up just because it's not a bad skill to have. Nah. But I mean, I could also walk away from it for a while and not really care.
Just walk away. All right, Ian, we got a Patreon, don't we?
Patreon.com/CU podcast. You go, you pay, you get. Sorry, you have not gotten the past 2 weeks of writing. My life.
You did one like busy. 9 days ago.
9 days ago. Yeah, it was 9 days ago.
You're overdue. Okay.
But I'm overdue. Tomorrow. You also get a full video podcast. You get...
Now you're going to get a bonus.
You're going to get a bonus podcast.
Patent exclusive.
You can, depending on the tier. We're going to record the first one this week.
This Saturday. And you get to hang out now with maybe both of us.
Yeah.
We're changing it up for 2021. And you get a poll top you vote on. In second place... Should Pat and Ian avoid controversial topics? 27%. And that doesn't mean if that wins, we will. That just means we talk about the discussion of controversial topics. People will be like, no, that means I can't talk about them. And in first place, 73%. Are there ethics involved in getting expensive games for a good price? And this is on the heels, as Ian ponders that, of there was a video put out on YouTube by these people, I guess, that help out. Clean out people's houses, like hoarders' houses, and people, I guess, that have passed away. And they found a ton of old video games, mostly stuff from the 2000s, but there was some 90s stuff in there as well. And a lot of those were sealed games. And they were locked away. It was like an attic or a weird room where it's a hoarder's house. There's shit everywhere, but there was like boxes of games, and a lot of them were sealed. Some are going back, some are GameCube stuff. 360 stuff, but some are from the 90s as well. And then, according to them, they valued them at around 100,000 US is what the value was put on these at. 100,000. And at the end of the video, I didn't watch the whole video, but I watched the end. They basically got all the video game stuff out of these people. I think it was someone that passed away and it was like their relatives that said, okay, help us clean out and we'll give whatever. And then the person didn't know what the prices were on this stuff. This older guy or guy in his 50s is like, all right, give me like $800 for all this. It was like tubs of games. If you find the video, Ian, and look at it. And then what people got upset about, me a little bit, was that this stuff was obviously worth a hell of a lot more than $800. I mean, like, even if you had no knowledge of stuff, we're talking, hundreds of games. Like a lot. They said, oh, give us like $400. And they started haggling it down from $800. And that's what I think set some people off when it came to that. It's like, not that you're taking advantage necessarily of these people's situation, but it's like, you know, you're getting an extremely good deal. You know, a lot of these games are like big hits. Some are sealed. This is not a small amount of money what these are worth. And so that brought us to talk about this because, like, we had this conversation years in the past, and obviously I go to the flea market. I try to find deals. I try to haggle. But what is the ethical line when it comes to haggling and price negotiation on stuff like this?
It's blurry. I mean, I'll tell you that. I think it's a good topic because I really think it's going to be...
Hey, what is...
By the way, this is from Cheap Finds Gold Mines channel. There you go.
I think it...
That's me playing it.
...really depends on the situation. And I think it also depends on where your... what your position is in the transaction. So... I think if you go to a store, you go to a place like, say, Luna Video Games, two locations, or a Goodwill, but a place like Luna, and I'm saying this as a person who has slipped on it before. If you go to a store and you find a game for cheap that is supposed to be very expensive, you buy that. You buy that and you walk out of that store with a deal and a sale that you never would have expected to happen. My feeling behind that is this is that place's business. This is their business. This is what they have decided to get into to make money. I feel at that instance, it is the store's responsibility to do the due diligence on their games and their prices, and to make sure that they are going out for the amount that they should. I say grab a deal because any store that you shop at is going to price certain things higher than they should because of popularity. They're going to price plenty of things where they should. If you're a regular at a store and you've been buying for a long time and they slip on something, you've been giving them a lot of money. They're going to learn better next time. I kind of feel the same way for thrift stores. They've priced it. Those places are full of treasure. If you get something for a good deal, you get it. However, in an instance like, I think if you are at a garage sale and it's a couple of grandparents selling stuff and they've got, I don't know, you know, an NES and a great chunk of games and they've got, you know, and say there's something really worthwhile in there, mm-hmm. and they're asking 20. Throw another 20 on top of it.
You still know you're getting a good deal.
You're still getting a good deal. Throw another 20 on top of it. You don't have to be like, and I realize that this is like I said, where it gets dicey. You don't have to be like, this game you've gotten here is worth 100 on its own. Mm-hmm. But just be like, hey, I wanted to let you guys know that this is worth a little bit more than you think. I'm happy to take it. Throw a couple extra bucks in there. I also think in an instance like the one that brings it up, I think if you are offered an extremely fair price at the start, you don't haggle down.
Yes.
And that's where I feel a little bit more, confident in having a stance. You don't fucking haggle it down.
This was a
1600 would have double the initial price.
This was a truck bed full of video games.
Double the initial price. 1600 would have been a fucking steal. I'm not saying in this instance you necessarily have to give more, but don't try to fucking haggle down from what you already know is an extraordinarily fair asking price, because it just makes you look cheap and shitty.
Yeah, and then that's what they got pushback on the video.
I mean, I want to make sure that it's clear that while I do think there are instances where it doesn't hurt to throw a little bit more money, I don't think you're an awful person if you go to a flea market and you get something for very cheap that should be expensive. Like I said, people do have a responsibility to do their due diligence on what they're selling.
Sure.
There are instances where I would personally feel guilty. But in this instance, no, that was wrong. There's no reason to try to haggle down from 800 to 400.
Yeah, I sort of fall in the same path. If you know you're getting a great deal on something where it's like, if that valuation is correct, they paid 1%, less than 1% of the price. At that point, we all like to save more money, but if they're going to end up selling stuff. These aren't collectors. These people, they're going to end up selling stuff and make a huge profit. Help out the family. That's all. Like you're right when it comes to that. It's interesting because we all like to get deals on stuff, whatever it is. We all haggle on stuff. I haggled on this house. I saved $2,000 on getting my Honda. My Honda.
I am not above haggling at a flea market to get a deal.
Yeah.
Don't ever do it in a fucking retail store, but at a flea market, it's the name of the game.
I'm sorry, Ian, for doing that for the DuckTales too. No, I didn't haggle on that. I gave him a good deal, but that's part of what is part of the charm, but also part of getting, I guess, a good deal. That's why you go out to the flea market at 7 a.m.
Yeah.
If I don't want to get up at 7 a.m, I'll just buy it on eBay. Like, why am I wasting my Sunday then?
Mm-hmm.
Just to get my, in my daily constitutional? No, we all want to get a good deal. It's part of the hunt. It's part of the allure of collecting anything, not just video games, anything. People go out and search for toys. They search for old shoes. People that collect vintage clothing. You see it all over the place.
Yeah.
It's not just that.
I'm not denying that. And like I said, I don't think you are bad if you don't do what I said I would maybe feel guilty about doing on occasion. You're right. That is part of the allure of collecting, is finding a set of things that you like, realizing that there is a natural rarity to certain things in that collection mm-hmm. you like, and then finding those rare things, not just finding them, but finding them for a good price.
Yeah.
That's part of it. That's a large part of why people collect.
Yeah.
It's for that specific buzz.
And for the people that have originally bought it, that are selling it, whether they're people that own the stuff originally, a lot of them, not a lot of them, but some of them might be like, okay, I understand it's worth more, but it's a hassle. I just want to sell it. Why do you think I'm at a flea market? Why do you think they're not putting it up on eBay? Because it's not worth their time and effort, even if they made more money. And some people will say that. It's like, yeah, I don't care. You know, it's like the same reason why people some trading stuff to the game store and be like, okay, that's cool. It's a bonus. I don't expect to get that much, but it's a bonus.
And those were the people that I always liked on trade-ins. And you'd be surprised, a lot of people aren't that way. So many people, you know, would come in and ask for, they'd be like, well, this is worth it. I'm like, well, sell it. And they're like, well, that's a pain. And
okay,
I'm like,
well,
yes. I'm like, that's
convenience cost.
Congratulations. Yes. You just figured it out.
It's convenience
cost. You tend to get more the more you have to put into something.
People go to the flea market to unload stuff for cash. It's convenience. And they're not getting top dollar for everything. They shouldn't expect it because it's convenience of unloading it.
Right.
Again, it's also for cash. Again,
now it's my responsibility to sell this for full price. You don't have to sit online. You don't have to deal with missed calls or people blowing off appointments on Craigslist. It's simple.
Taking pictures for eBay.
Right.
Dealing with the account stuff, PayPal, boxing stuff up, going into the post office, buyer disputes. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And then plus it's all taxed versus cash.
Yeah.
You know,
cash
at a flea market. So like, yeah, there's that aspect as well. And so. I think my line is this: do not be deceptive. That's all my lines.
Yeah.
Do not be deceptive. Don't. There are some ethics to me when it comes to these practices, whether it's called capitalism or not. Do not be deceptive. At that point, you lose your soul. You don't say stuff like, "Oh, you know, this isn't worth that much."
Yeah,
when you know it is.
It is. Right. Don't do that.
You don't say. You don't say. You don't try to take people for a ride.
Right.
Don't be a fucking asshole. Keep your mouth shut. You see a good deal. Keep your mouth fucking shut.
In all things, honesty.
Yeah, that's it. Try to be a better person overall. I mean, if it's really worth it for you to get an extra $20 off and have to lie about it, is that $20 worth the part of your integrity? To some people, it is.
Right.
Some people don't have that. And that's where it is. Don't lie about it. Don't lie like, oh, no, this is really not worth much. And it's like.
Yeah, don't do that.
Don't do that. Just be like, okay, you found a good deal. Give the person their money. Don't make them feel like shit, or don't put a question in their head to be like later, like, does that person, imagine if you did that to someone, oh, this is really worth that much, and to try to get an extra $5, that person might be like later, I'm going to look that up. Then they realize, I got taken for a fucking ride by that asshole. Now you just ruined their day because you wanted to save $5-$10. Just don't be that person.
Right.
We all want a deal. Just don't be a piece of shit when it comes to it. But collectors, a lot of collectors are assholes in all aspects, not just video games.
Yeah, I think it's a
mentality.
It's a good way for a morally ambiguous person to fully commit to the dark side. Because once you get into it, the person with morals is going to, like I said, just be honest in all these things. And then the person who's not that's going to be the person who goes up to the, you know, it's going to be those people. It's going to be a person who goes to the garage sale and instead of realizing that there's a good deal there, is going to be like, this isn't worth anything, and you know, trying to get it for half that, even though it's worth 5 times the amount that they've priced it at.
50 times or whatever it is. And then they try to justify saying, well, if it wasn't us trying to do that, they would have thrown it in a dumpster. It's like, that doesn't excuse the behavior.
No.
It's so they get a bad option or no option. It's like, only $400 for that stuff. After, I mean, you should just take the $800 here, $800. We're happy to do it.
Give them a crisp $1,000 and no say, one, keep the change.
No one would have.
I know there's not a $1,000.
This is $1,000 bill. There's probably there used to be all those big bills.
I think there used to be, but not. Yeah, there isn't anymore.
That's the only thing that was weird about that video. But glad they got their stuff there. Ian, we got to listen to voicemails.
We do.
Anchor.fm/ACU podcast. You can leave us a quickie, and we'll get back to you within a reasonable time.
Yeah, we try.
Hey, Pat and Ian. This is James from Hudson, Ohio. Huge fan of the podcast. Thanks for all you do. It really means a lot to me. This is a question primarily for Ian. Do you have any suggestions for somebody hoping to get into vinyl? I've been trying to find an affordable setup out there, but frankly, there's so many options. It's just a bit overwhelming. Thanks so much.
I let that one slip through.
I think Audio Technica's current line of direct drive, or probably even the belt drive turntables, are good. I've had multiple friends get them. They enjoy them. If you wanted to look into something, and those can be had for, I mean, fairly reasonable. You're still looking at some money, but they're not out of the realm of possibility. If you want to look into something vintage, I always like Pioneer. I would always suggest looking at a Pioneer turntable.
But Onkyo, I like Onkyo. I like that name.
Onkyo. Yeah, I remember them.
My 15 years I've had my receiver. Still works fine. My Onkyo.
I think my dad had an Onkyo turntable at one point.
Onkyo, they're robust, aren't they? The company? No.
As far as records, find your most localist record shop and go there frequently. Constantly look through the used bin. If they're a good record shop, they'll have used new arrivals, and check that as much as you can. Records are getting expensive these days. They are worth a good amount of credit at a good record store. Always, always, always check the used trade-ins.
God, do I even own any vinyl? I'm trying to think if I own like even anything. Frank obviously has some.
Hey, Pat and Ian, first time, long time. So with the time that has passed since the release of the Nintendo 64, do you think it's finally time for Nintendo to have a classics collection for the Nintendo Switch, a la the SNES and NES classics? Also, what is your favorite game that absolutely pisses you off, but you still find yourself having to come back to it anyway?
I don't think I come back to any games that piss me off. I don't think I do.
No, I don't. I don't play things that make me angry. However, shooters can get me a little rumbly grumbly. But it's a good kind of anger. It's the type of anger where it's like, I want to go one more time. I want to beat it.
First person shooter?
No, just like shoot 'em ups.
Oh, shoot 'em ups. Okay.
So, I mean, that's probably the closest. I mean, shoot 'em ups will definitely get to a point where I'm like, all right, I'm done for the day. They're very hard. They're meant to be. And I always go back to them, but I don't get like actual, like detrimentally angry at them.
So does this person mean N64 like mini, or they meant like N64?
I think they meant like an N64 mini. But I think Nintendo realized
there's no money in that compared to what they're doing now. Spend $50 on a controller that cost us $5 to manufacture, and then we'll just charge you $5 more.
I never said it, but I think by jumping directly to the digital, I don't think we'll ever see an N64 mini.
No.
It's not worth the production line. It's not worth the R&D. It's not worth any of that when they can just throw a bunch of ROMs up online for $5 or $10.
Reggie Fils-Aimé admitted we did the they did the NES Classic because they had nothing going on that winter 2016 before the Switch.
Needed something to sell for Christmas.
Nothing to sell.
Yeah.
It was dead for Nintendo that holiday season. And that game, they sold a few million of those, and that gave them a shot in the arm over next year. And then the Super Nintendo one, they probably said, well, we made them, and this is before Switch Online, obviously. They're like, well, we need something else to make money, because there was always a huge amount of games out for the Switch in late 2015. We made a ton of money off this. Let's do the natural progression. But yeah, they weren't going to do an N64 one after that, I think. I think they realized this isn't our business to sell these trinkets. We sell video games, not a fucking trinket box filled with video games, if that makes sense.
Sure.
So the online will make their money. It's smart business to do that. It'll deal with manufacturers and bullshit.
Hey, Pat and Ian. This is John from Seattle, Washington. Love the podcast. Two questions to Ian. I know that you noticed if you talked about Killer 7. It's one of my favorite games. I was just wondering if you played any other Grasshopper games that you really enjoyed.
I have no idea what these are.
I did not like Shadows of the Damned as much as I had hoped. I never played Killer Must Die. I have played Flower Sun Rain a little bit, and I like it as obtuse as it is. I have Silver Case, but I have not played that yet. I have played No More Heroes 1. I love it. I still have to play 2 and 3. In general, I tend to be like 50-50 on Suda51 stuff, but I admire what he does. I think he's creative. I think he does good stuff. I just don't think all of it sticks for me. But I'm glad someone's out there doing weird games.
Hey guys, it's Richard from Pittsburgh. We met at Too Many Games in 2016, and that was cool. Anyway, I had a little question about some weird trend I've noticed over the last few years. I'm in a lot of PS1 groups, and it seems fairly common for people to get big into collecting, buy up a small library, including some heavy hitters and some things that they think of as hidden gems. They start talking about variants in the group, start talking about little details they notice that they think others might have missed. Soon they come off as at least somewhat knowledgeable before they start offloading their collection. Like 6 months later, they're offloading their whole collection. Have you noticed this kind of trend, and what do you think about it? Thanks.
Yes, I saw it all the time at Luna. All the time. Someone gets into collecting, and it becomes their thing. And these people, there was a kid, actually, I think you knew him as well. There was a kid who used to come to Luna all the time and was constantly looking for all the heavy hitters, constantly bragging about the heavy hitters he got. He was around for about 3 years, and then last I heard, he had sold everything and just vanished. Just stopped. I've seen a lot of people do that. They think it looks great. They get into it. And this is not just video games. I think this is a lot of hobbies. People, they don't dip their toes in and test the water first to see if something is going to be for them. They jump into it. They, you know, like you said, they buy all the heavy hitters. For someone getting into PlayStation, they're going to jump in, they're going to start buying all the Square Enix RPGs. That's what they're looking for. Or someone who's jumping into record collecting is going to start, I don't know, trying to find all the greatest Beatles albums in perfect shape and Bowie and stuff like that. You know, the first Prince. And I think they just go so hard on it. They spend so much money on it.
It's almost like an OCD thing, I think.
Yeah, it is.
And once they're in it, they got to get everything real quick.
They're out. And I've seen, and people who do that, again, I'm not trying to make a judgment call or say anyone's bad.
It's OCD.
But people who do this, they tend to do it with a lot of other hobbies, too.
I saw it. I saw it with someone I knew. This was 15...
Every 2 years, it's a different hobby that is their big thing, and it's going to be their thing forever.
Yeah. I saw it with someone in Jersey. They did it with, believe it or not, back then they were a lot cheaper overall, Game & Watches. Wanted to get every single Nintendo Game & Watch, which was like dozens and dozens.
And the thing is, while those things are expensive now, they've never been cheap.
They never were cheap. So the hard-to-find ones, like the Zelda ones 15 years ago was like only probably 15, 20 bucks, 30 bucks. Now it's hundreds. But like the hard-to-find ones were expensive still. So this person, within a year, got like the vast majority of them, like got within like a handful and might have done it, then sold them all off within a year. Like you spent... You got this beautiful collection, all this stuff. Now we're selling it off. There's a lot more people like that than you think. They get into it. It's completed. Now what? Now I got the stuff. What do I do with it?
Yeah, and that goes back to stuff I had said, you know, earlier in the Luna topic. It's
happens.
It's people who don't. Who collect things because they like
the feeling of collecting things.
They like the numbers game of collecting.
They don't like the thing they're collecting necessarily. They like the feeling of collecting.
They like the feeling of collecting, not the thing that they're buying.
Hey, Pat and Ian. Love the show.
Thank you.
What has been the most rage you've committed from losing in a video game? I once flipped over my mattress after losing my internet connection during a WoW dungeon run. Thanks.
Most rage. I have mine.
I really don't. I just stop playing games when I get mad. I've threw a controller once, but it was because a game scared me.
Okay, that's...
But I have never like thrown a controller or like kicked a console.
I've never done it. I hurt my tricep, which hurt for many years until I got in there and dug it out. Worms Armageddon, playing it online.
You were talking about that with me last week.
It was sophomore year of college, so I was like, you know, 19 going on 20, whatever. Did it in front of my roommate Rocco, who was a great swimmer. Thought I was crazy. I slammed this down on the table, and I mean damaged my tricep muscle,
buddy,
and it was hurting for a long time until I finally, the past 3, 4, 5 years started, I mean, really getting a deep massage in here, and that really helped it. Massage works, by the way. If you never, the massage fucking is great. Yeah, Worms Armageddon, playing competitively. It was ranked!
Oh.
But the worst thing about Worms is that it's so unique because it's not really real time, and you see it happen, but like it's back and forth, so it's you see your death coming in 30-second chunks, basically. That's what's so frustrating about it.
It is. And then you know when you're in a position that you can't really worm your way out of.
Or you try to go up the rope and you screw it up, the ninja rope, and it's like, oh my, like, everything's on a, it's something about Worms that's what did it versus a first-person shooter. Let's see what we got next year.
Hey, Pat and Ian, Bill here from Chicago. Chicago. Love you guys' podcast. I listen to it every day. My question is, given everything that you guys know about the Amico and television in terms of, you know, hardware, graphics, the controllers it comes with, the types of games that are going to be on it, given everything you guys know, what do you think a realistic or fair price should be for it when it comes out to the market, if it ever comes out? What should the price tag say when it hits the market? I'd love to hear what you guys think. Thank you, and keep up the great work.
What it should cost if you're running a viable business and cared about your consumers and having a like sort of a long tail on your ecosystem of games, $150 at most. I mean, at most.
Yeah. I don't know that this is possible, but this, and I'm echoing a sentiment that a friend of ours also shares. I think, honestly, if there was a way for this to have come out at $100, this thing would do gangbusters over Christmas.
$100 with like 10 packs.
Two controllers, 10 packing games. You know, I think it could have done well.
Obviously, controllers got to be cheaper than what the hell they're trying to do.
And obviously, who knows? That probably can't be done. But we know that it doesn't have to be $250.
Yes, we know.
We absolutely know. We know the profit margin is insane. So I still think it would be an uphill battle for the Amico at $150 because the Ouya at $100 still had issues. I don't think there's really. Once again, it comes down to they're trying to create a market that does not exist.
I think I settled on like $120 with like 15 packing games. This is like a year or two ago. I said it's like $120 with 15 packing games, but that's the only thing you're ever going to sell. Is that
right?
That's it. Maybe you have an online store to sell dollar games, but you make all your money off of that. So you give, you're not killing them. You're giving them a good value at $120. You know, maybe you make, you know, $50 on each unit you sell, whatever.
Sure.
It costs you $60 to produce it. That's the plan. And you can sell tens of thousands of those and make a pretty good profit. Maybe 100,000 if you're lucky. If they went down that avenue, it would have been a totally different story. Selling, you know, mobile games or giving mobile games.
Yeah, they could have done like a deluxe. Basically, they could have made a deluxe type plug and play.
But. Yeah, or do a plug and play where, well, here's the original Intellivision games. Now here's all the reimagined ones.
We're gonna buy ourselves a spot at E3 and pretend we're the big boys.
Hi guys, I've been watching the podcast for a couple months, and every time I see Ian, I just think, wow, that looks like a guy who really likes to eat spaghetti. And I've just been wondering for a long time, every single time I watch an episode, Ian, do you like spaghetti? And if so, why? Thank you very much.
Hey, this is a critical question.
Oh, this is one of my all-time favorite questions. This is the type of question that I wish we got more of. I do like spaghetti. I do, but I don't eat a lot of spaghetti.
Me neither. It's not a preferred pasta.
No, that's exactly it. I love pasta dishes. Spaghetti is not my preferred pasta. I saw a recent recipe for a spaghetti-based meal that I would like to try. But I do love a good red sauce and pasta.
Meat sauce, meatballs and sausage.
Whether it's just
Brajol.
A simple pomodoro or sometimes the bolognese. They're all good. I do love a pasta and red sauce.
We're 3 months away from Frank having a sister over and making the tons of meat sauce. You got to come over for one eventually. Frank's epic meat sauce. Then he freezes it and you have it the next 3-4 months after that. Fucking starving.
Gotta remember the name of the pasta that I love.
Couple more.
Yeah.
Hey, Pat. Hey, Ian. This is Bill from Quakertown, Pennsylvania. Oh. Met you guys a couple years ago at Too Many Games. You guys signed my Ghostbusters DVD. Sweet. Anywho, spent the day at Dorney Park in Wildwater Kingdom.
Been there.
And it got me wondering if you guys had any particularly favorite amusement parks and or thrill rides. Thanks, guys. Have a good one.
I think it's not there anymore. Waterworks in Seaside Heights was a great water park. It used to be Rainbow Rapids. There was one down the street. There was two in Seaside within blocks of it. Rainbow Rapids was great. Then Waterworks with their great Lazy River. Is that still there? I think that might have been bought out. That's my favorite stuff. My parents never took me to, like, I never been to the Land of Make-Believe. Obviously, okay, Bowcraft, which is like the low-rent one off Route 22, Scotch Plains, New Jersey. Shout out to everyone in Scotch Plains in that area. And then never went to Great Adventure. Always wanted to go to Great Adventure, never went.
Being from the Northeast, I was close enough distance to go to Cedar Point a few times. Love Cedar Point. Tons and tons of roller coasters there. I was a huge roller coaster junkie in my teens and in my early 20s. So Cedar Point was excellent. Growing up in Buffalo, I went to Canada's Wonderland a lot. And then we had Darien Lake, which Darien Lake got better over the years. I honestly stopped paying attention to it. I don't know if they've added any new rides. But yeah, I do love roller coasters. I love the tall ones, the fast ones, the ones that go upside down. There's basically nothing a roller coaster can do that I would be too afraid to try, which is funny because there are lots of simple fair and carnival rides that I will not go on.
It's now Breakwater Beach Water Park in Seaside. Waterworks was a great name. Well, someone bought it. All right, we'll do two more.
Hey, fellas, this is Rodney from Asheville, North Carolina, and I kind of wanted to take a little time to invite you fellas out. Oh. If you're ever in Western North Carolina and you want to hit up either the Asheville Pinball Museum or the Appalachian Pinball Museum in Hendersonville, let me know.
I will.
That leads me to my question, which is mostly for Ian, but Pat, if you want to throw in your two cents, I'm here to hear it.
I have some value.
If you could have your own pinball museum, what vintage and or modern cabinets and machines would you want included in that collection? All right, fellas, have a great day, and take care.
So
you've done this before, so
we have. I mean, really, it's hard to say it because I'd pretty much just want all the pinball machines I could get. However, I've always wanted to put all four Bally wide bodies side by side. Always wanted to do it.
Which those four again?
Hot Doggin, Embryon, Paragon.
When you have
Space Invaders. I always feel like I'm missing
What's
one.
What's that workout one that used to be up
with? Oh, that's the next one I want. Future Spa.
That's
Future
a good
Spa.
One.
Yeah, there's five of them. I want all five
I
of
used
those.
To play when they did those little competitions. I was decent at that one.
Wide Future body Spa. Pinball is absolutely a different beast than normal pinball.
Oh, yeah.
It absolutely is. I don't
it's,
like it
it's,
better.
It's
I don't
a
think
slower,
it's worse.
More technical game.
But I adore it, and I love the big art. I really want all of those.
What do those run on average?
Honestly, they're probably among the cheaper pinball tables because they're like older them. And it's kind of a love or hate thing for people.
Solid state stuff people don't like as much.
More the wide body. People like solid state. Okay.
And we got someone else checking in here.
Good day, gentlemen. This is your good friend Tommy, just leaving a message for His Holiness Pat Country and Sir Ian Ferguson the Righteous. Because apparently, unlike you guys, I'm a very bad man who says really mean things. Yeah, that story about the driver, that was true. I'm not ashamed to admit it. I'm sorry, but if you think the person who did the music for Color of Dinosaur should have to talk to his driver, then whatever, man, sue me. But sue me after the Amico comes out, please. Yeah, don't sue me right now. That would not be good. But yeah, the only time I want a driver talking to me is if he's got one of those machines you got to hold up to your throat, you know, that makes you talk like a robot. That shit is classic. But if that doesn't apply to you, I'm going to need you to just drive the damn car and shut up. On a serious note, though, until you've walked a mile in my shoes, if you don't have something nice to say about me, just don't say anything at all. And fuck Undertale, bye.
Wow. Oh, come on, Tommy.
Tommy.
Show some respect to Undertale there. Well, that was a fun one, wasn't it?
That was a fun podcast.
We're done with the podcast.
We're done. I'm hot. I gotta go work.
You gotta. Oh, this wasn't work. It was work.
It was. I mean,
this is a fun podcast. I had fun.
I told you the other week when we were talking. I actually don't mind. I enjoy doing this podcast.
Oh, you don't mind?
I don't mind.
You don't mind?
It's a good time.
It's like getting a dental cleaning. I don't mind it.
Low stress.
All right. We'll see you later.